Kötü. Durumu korkuyor. Ben bak COVID'i bulamadım.
Good morning, my name is Jack Berger, I'm from the Eastern Cape and a member of this committee.
Morning, I'm Velim Kasanamanzin from Mpumalanga and I'm also a member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is John Gunder, I'm from the Northern Cape and I'm a member of this committee.
Morning Chair, morning Minister, morning everybody, my name is Dennis Bloom. And I'm a member of the committee.
Just the birth and the committee. The birth, just the birth and the committee.
People.
Good morning, Minister. My name is Edwin Kinnis. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
My name is Gershwin Dixon. I'm the secretary for the committee.
Good morning, Patricia Whittle. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Over to you, Melissa. Thank you very much, and thank you to the NCOP for giving us this opportunity to present our 2013-2017 strat plan. We are going to be, of course, we are part of the secretary cluster and in the GCPS cluster, we concentrate on goal number 3, to make the people of South Africa to feel safe and be safe. Be safe in their houses, be safe in their communities, be safe in their schools, be safe. And it's quite a very heavy. It's a very serious responsibility because it defines when you are in England, when you are in the US, when you are in Zambia or anywhere. There is something even in your shoulders where you feel, you know, where here I can walk. There is something where you say, I don't feel safe here. We are in the GCPS cluster with our colleagues in intelligence do guesswork to say who might be brewing, plotting trouble here. And the police do the same. They actually arrest. They are not sure whether that person is guilty or not. And the judges and magistrates decide one way or the other. We deal with the end product of them all, the 150,000 who are then in this whole process are then found to have committed a crime. So in a sense we have got custody. We can produce a person who has actually done this, and our task is to ensure that that person, when they get in, they are criminal. When they come out, they must be better human beings. And it is in that sense, therefore, that our strategic plan is to ensure that the person who has been with us for 6 months, for 6 years, for 15 years, is better than when they came in. And you want to ensure that even if they are not better, they are not worse. They don't come back, and they actually start contributing into society. And through that, it means that in the first week that the person is in, being admitted, you must get them to start first admitting that it's not just the bad magistrate or judge, it's not just a bad police that conspires that you'll be here. You must admit that indeed you did wrong. Sometimes that constitutes regret, but regret sometimes is regret that I should not have got caught. Not that I should not have committed the crime, but I should not have got caught. But it graduates to remorse where you actually feel that I did something wrong and I wronged somebody. To points where you accept you are guilty and then you want to do something about it. First, admit that to yourself, you're a better person. And now we are encouraging a process which is working very well to say you do need to meet the victim and say, I am sorry for what I did. Not so much that you demand, you are asking for forgiveness, but you are merely expressing that you are sorry. And that is beginning, you are beginning a way to rehabilitation if you do that. We have established what we call the victim-offender dialogue, which is actually working very well. It's being accepted by the communities very well, where people come in and say, this is what I did, and so forth. And it actually empowers the communities to actually ensure that that doesn't happen again. And because those people who are so changed are able to link up with others to say, don't go that route. And therefore, we are therefore on the route to reintegration of former offenders to be reintegrated as useful members of the community. Our system therefore takes that holistic view, the victim-offender dialogue being one of our key project and linking up with the communities and having a lot of mass participation in the community so that indeed you start seeing that this is wrong. When I was yesterday during the President Stina, when he was hosting the President of Nigeria, I was sitting with the one minister from Nigeria and the ambassador of Nigeria in South Africa. And we're just discussing, and when I mentioned that we've got something like 154,000 inmates, he was shocked throughout the dinner. 154,000 people inside prison. Now Nigeria is this year the Africans are saying 175 million people, the population. And they are talking about something like 44,000 inmates. We, with 51 million people, are talking about 154,000. And they couldn't understand how that can happen inside prison. Inside prison, not 6 months, 2 months. They are doing five is the less, and then others are doing 102, 105, 95, 52. They couldn't understand that in the absence of apartheid that could have so many people in prison. Therefore, the task that we are involved in really means a societal involvement, because there is something that is terribly wrong for the numbers of inmates. Now we have reduced in 1985-86 when the PAC laws were removed. Didn't reduce when apartheid laws were removed in 1993, 1994, 1995. It just remains the same. If anything, it goes on the upward. And therefore, there's something that we as society need to do in a very serious way. Our third plan, therefore, wants to deal with this matter in a much more, in a holistic way, in order to ensure that we are a department that actually reduces its number of intakes, because crime would have been reduced, because our people would be feeling much safer and in their homes, in their schools, and so forth. There's nothing as bad as not feeling safe in your own house. And our presentation, therefore, is going to be trying to see how we want to make this challenge. COO is going to take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee. My name is Nonsikele Rojolingana. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Correctional Services and currently Acting National Commissioner. And before we get into the presentation, we'll quickly introduce to the chairperson who is here. On the first row, I've got Mr. Teres Rasoroka, who's the acting CDC for strategic management. Next to him is Ms. Nandi Mareka, our acting CFO. Behind them, Mr. Smallberger, CDC Incarceration and Correction. Next to him, Ms. Pumla Matibela, CDC Community Corrections. Behind me, Ms. Britta Rothman, CDC Remand Detention. And Ms. Tabiseng Musupe, our Chito, also CDC. Chairperson, we will be presenting to this house the progress that we've made in terms of the plans of the previous years, but this will be presented in the form of an annual report, which will be presented later during the year. But for today, as the minister has clearly indicated, we are presenting the stretch plan 2013 up to 2017, and our revised plan gives a clear roadmap for the next NTEF period. It clearly outlines our strategic goals, as the minister has touched on some, and our objectives that are in line with government priorities. And as the minister has also said, that we took into consideration the NDP priorities. Our APP, as you will see in the presentation, has clear quarterly targets which outline the details of how we break down those targets into manageable outputs per quarter. And we will further break down those into operational plan, which would be managed at operational level on a monthly basis. We have also aligned our new vision and mission, values, strategic goals and objectives, and this demonstrates our efforts as a department to ensure that there is coherence with government planning, monitoring and reporting. And we believe that indeed we will contribute immensely in ensuring that the fight against crime is won in this country. We have a clear focus. I think since our last engagement with the NCOP, we have hence progressed a lot in terms of the management of remand detainees, by ensuring that we have a dedicated remand detention branch. We're also ensuring the rehabilitation and development of offenders. And this is what is central to our business. And as the minister has rightfully said, we want to ensure that a product that we release is a properly rehabilitated product that would be a responsible citizen of our country. In terms of the presentation, this acting CDC strategic management will do the first part of the presentation, which will cover the stretch plan and APD, and then the acting CFO will do the financial part. So with your permission, Chairperson, if you allow us, we are ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Select Committee. I will be taking the committee through the strategic plan as well as the APP of the department. I need to indicate that in the green books that we have, both the APP and the stress plan, there's a page one, the very first page, very colourful. In actual fact, that page is our short summary of what our plans are all about. I also need to indicate that the department early this year in January went on a board barrage, which included both Minister and Deputy Minister, to go and look into the future of this department. We had to relook into our vision, our mission, and we actually came up with a new vision and mission that talks to the challenges that we're facing as an organization and how best we need to deal with them. So I'm here by presenting a new vision of the department to the Select Committee, and that vision is providing the best correctional services for a safer South Africa. And our new mission is contributing to a just, peaceful and safer South Africa through effective and humane incarceration of inmates, rehabilitation and social reintegration of offenders. So that is what is driving our organization
This is what is driving the future of the department. And of course, in any organization, we need them that be able to drive people who can be able to drive the organization. And based on that, we developed 8 core values of the department, which were actually focusing on development of both senders and officials, integrity in the way in which we conduct our business, Ubuntu, which is a very central figure of our values, the effectiveness in terms of how we deal with our business, accountability in terms of each and every decision that we take and action that we take as an organization, justice that we must apply in terms of dealing with ourselves as members of the staff, but also most importantly with those who are at our care, security, which is also very critical and core to our mandate, as well as ensuring equality. So these are the values basically that we all agreed upon, and they have to be cascaded and enshrined in terms of the way in which we do business as a department. And the next element, which is in green, is our key strategic outcome-oriented goals. You will see these goals clearly talks to the mandate of the department as stipulated in the Correctional Services Act. The first one is to ensure that there is effective criminal justice through effective management of remand processes. The second one is society being protected through incarcerated offenders being secured and rehabilitated. And the third one is society being protected by offenders being reintegrated in the community as law-abiding citizens. You will see that actually these 3 strategic goals are actually covered by our organizational structure. Because for each and every goal that has been identified here, there is a dedicated business unit, really a branch headed by a CDC concern. And then we have identified strategic objectives that actually support our 5 programs as outlined in our estimate of national expenditure. We are having administration, and on administration we've got 4 strategic objectives. The first one is to build organizational capacity to enhance service delivery, effective management of business processes to promote good governance and ethical administration, providing a secure ICT infrastructure and business system, professionalizing for effective human resource management and development. So these are the objectives that drive our administration in the organization. Under incarceration as program number 2, we are saying that there has to be effective management of remand detention processes to promote and enable participation in court processes. There must be remand detainees and offenders that are held in secure, safe and humane conditions, and there has to be effective case management processes. And this function basically is focused on our remand detainees that we actually take care of. Under rehabilitation, we are saying that there should be effective incarceration and rehabilitation and to protect society, to ensure that the offender behavior is corrected through access to correctional programs and psychological, social and spiritual services, to ensure that offenders' human development is improved through literacy, education and skills competency programs. And the fourth one is to make sure that we reduce re-offending so that we can contribute to a safer South Africa. And the program on the care, we want to make sure that those who are under our care, who are incarcerated, that they are provided with appropriate nutritional services, they are provided with access to health, as well as access to hygiene services. And on the social reintegration, we are basically saying that those probational parolees that are rehabilitated, monitored, and accepted as law-abiding citizens by the communities. And also ensure that offenders are provided with access to reparative justice processes, effective management and functioning of the parole board. So in one page, this is a summary of what we as a department intention is, and we're basically saying that we break down all these summarized issues in terms of our plan. So I will basically take the committee through the presentation that actually supports what I've just been going through. As Minister said, our key mandate is to support government priority areas. And as we know, members of the House, that fight against crime and corruption is one of the key areas that the current government is focused on. And as a department, we are basically saying that we are committed in fighting against crime and contributing to ensure that this is actually achieved. You would know that there are 12 outcomes. Out of the 5 key areas identified, there are 12 government outcomes. As DCS and as member of the DCPS cluster, we are actually contributing to outcome number 3, which is all people in South Africa are and feel safe. And out of that outcome number 3, the GSPS has just set around identifying 7 cluster outputs. And these cluster outputs are actually in line with what is contained in the National Development Plan. And we as a department, we actually contribute to output number 2. The National Development Plan clearly focuses on the role that we actually contribute to as a department on both Chapter 12 and Chapter 14. And we are therefore saying that our plan is actually talking to those key issues that are identified in the plan. And we have identified out of cluster number 2 output the specific outcomes that we as a department clearly focus on. You will see in the next slide that we have actually aligned our mandate, our activities to both cluster outcomes as well as the output. So alignment with the government priorities actually is playing a central role in terms of this plan that we're presenting today. The outputs of JCPS, which is output 2, we are actually contributing to and expected to actually give on sub output 2.6, which is the average length of time in remand detention. The second one is basically our responsibility to look into ensuring that the detention of high-risk and violent offenders in both CSAPS and GPS are actually taken care of. We are supposed to develop correctional sentence plans for those offenders that are offended, that are sentenced. We are supposed to profile all offenders and develop a framework on repeat offending by the European legislative. This is what the cluster output is all about. And the first sub-output 2.7 is about the percentage of parolees without parole violations. And we are therefore saying that there has to be an increased use of ADR, including restorative justice, increased support to parolees and ex-offender programs. We need to test the electronic monitoring system of parolees. We have to strengthen the parole system by means of increasing participation in parole hearings by both SAPS and the Department of Justice. We have a responsibility to extend offender involvement in social infrastructure projects and rehabilitation and intervention. And these interventions are actually stipulated in our plans. We also need to enhance social reintegration, including improved visitation of inmates. The specific strategic outcome oriented goals that talk to this output are outlined as follows. The output 2, the sub-output 2.6, that I talked about, it's actually talking to our goal 1, which is effective criminal justice through the management of remand processes. And there is a dedicated branch that basically focuses on this and makes sure that this happens. On service objective goal 2, we are actually directly supporting output 2, that is making sure that society is protected through incarcerated offenders being secured and developed. And then in terms of outcome, strategic outcome goal 3, we are supporting output 2.7 about parolees, and this responsibility is currently sitting with the branch, community corrections or social reintegration, which is to ensure that society is protected by offenders being reintegrated back into the society. Other specific outputs that talk to the outputs of the JCPS in terms of making sure that there is an alignment. We are saying that, and this is contained in our plan, that the remand detainees will have conditions conducive for participation in court services, and we are clearly outlining as to how we would want to do that according to different quarterly targets. The increase of the will be the reduced average length of time in our remand facilities. Talking to strategic outcome-oriented goal 2, we are focusing on the output that says offenders are held in safe, secure, and humane custody, improved production of correctional sentence plans, offending behavior is corrected, and the indicator there is also to ensure that the average length of time is actually reduced. And we also have alignment in terms of goal 3 to make sure that we improve administration and supervision of persons under the systems of community corrections, and the indicator there will be the percentage of parolees without violations and operationalization of the electronic monitoring system. you would see also that as government, I need to explain this, as a department, as much as we have tried very much to align to government priorities, we also have what you call our daily activities as outlined by the Correctional Services Act, as outlined by the normal business processes, and these are the outputs that are actually not aligned, but they're actually part and parcel of our mandate, and it's things that we do on a continual basis. I'm not going to focus on them, because clearly those are our normal business processes. But I also need to indicate that we are on a continuing to ensure that partnerships with the Department of Home Affairs in terms of accessing the AFIS for inmate identification. We'll talk about this when we present the IT performance plan that talks specifically to this output. And then in terms of output number 4, the percentage of crime among the population managed is what we're going to do, improve victim involvement programs, restoration of relationships between offenders, victims and community. We actually do that through a number of interventions. Since Minister joined the department last year, there's been a very robust program of VOD sessions, and all these activities are actually in support of this output that we're talking about. And that's why the integrated ICT systems through facing the implementation of the criminal justice system, business information system. There's an IT-related activity that us as a department we actively contribute to make sure that there is an integration of the IT system within the JCPS cluster. This is just the JCPS cluster flowchart. It really tells us where the crime is, when the crime is committed, when it's reported, who's doing the investigation, arrest is made, there's prosecution, there's a trial, there's a verdict, and in that someone is either fined or acquitted or comes to us. And if this person comes to us, we take good care of this person, rehabilitate, develop, and prepare this person to be reintegrated back into society. So that is our core mandate, and this mandate is in line with what is contained in the Constitution as well as in the Correctional Services Act. Now, in terms of the strategic plan, we need to clearly say that the intent of the plan, as presented by the Minister in the foreword, is a strategic intent that calls for a stretch and leverage of resources to meet the articulated service delivery standards of the department. So basically, the intent that Minister talked about in the plan is the desired service delivery standard. It clearly tells us what needs to happen in the coming years as far as the department is concerned. And then the overview of the plan is actually all components of the plan in compliance to government plan frameworks is a building block towards the planning process. I also need to confirm that our current plan that we are presenting is in line with the national treasury requirements, is in line with the presidency requirements in terms of how the strategic plan is, so that I can be able to put our performance, monitoring, evaluation, as well as reporting. So we are basically in line with the compliance means. As I said earlier, there are core values of the department. And the value system and organizational culture is also very critical, because we need to be able to drive an organization that is cultured, that has values, that has shared common denominator. Everybody else who comes into an organization should have an understanding as to why am I here and what is it that I'm supposed to do. So we actually develop the core values that are supposed to be driving our staff so that other staff can drive the organization to achieve its mandate. We are also focusing on the legislative framework. Clearly, we exist because of a legislative requirement. We are existing because of the Constitution and the Correctional Services Act. So we are clarifying our mandate as outlined in those two pieces of progressive legislation. We are going to also present the situational analysis in the plan. This is basically the basis for crafting this current strategy. We'll focus on the performance environment, the organizational environment, as well as the strategic training process that led to this document. We will also do the performance information, and in that information we will talk about standards for performance under review. So clearly we'll look into our goals, our objectives, our outcomes, outputs, indicators, and targets. And there will also be the inputs that actually we share the input that we received during the process in terms of leading to this document. As I said, Minister has made serious pronouncements that actually drives the organization. And in this green document, we're actually responding to Minister's direction in terms of what needs to happen. And to move forward, Minister focused on four critical areas, amongst others. The first one, he clearly talked about freedom and order. And in addition, he said history teaches us that freedom will not last unless it is coupled with order. And that freedom and order do coexist. It is essential that freedom should be exercised under authority and order should be enforced by authority. So as a department, we have to make an introspection and to clearly understand what this means. And we also have a responsibility to ensure that we give meaning to this statement. The second thing that Minister said in his forward is that as part of the JCPS structure, our key focus area as a department is to fight against crime and corruption and to ensure that all people in our country are and feel safe. The third issue is the year of the correctional official, which is 2030, and it clearly indicates that the ideal correctional official embodies the values the department hopes to instill in the offender, one who is to facilitate the rehabilitation process of the offender. So central to the rehabilitation and the development of the offender is the correctional official. So the way we conduct ourselves, the way we treat those who are under our care, clearly determine the product in which we want to take out of those. The fourth element, Minister clearly indicated that we have to turn our correctional centers into learning centers. And we have to make sure that those who are under our care do eat, do study, and work. The department is enforcing correction programs through various activities, cultural activities that include music, reading for redemption, creative literature, the arts, cultural events, heritage renewal events, sporting events, formal education and acquisition of skills, economic renewal through cooperatives and enterprise development, spiritual growth and self-correcting interventions, amongst others. So, honorable members, this is basically what Minister is truly giving a direction on, and as a department, we are actually making sure that we turn this pronouncement into realities that will assist us to turn the organization around. Clearly, Minister has committed that working together with the Deputy Minister, the National Commissioner, the entire department, and all stakeholders, he is confident that this plan will yield positive results in terms of safety for South Africans. Now, there are three parts of this plan that we are presenting. The first one will talk about the vision, mission, values, the legislative mandate, situation analysis, outcome-oriented goals. The part B will focus on the strategic performance elements, resource consideration, as well as risk management issues. Then, the part C is basically a link to other plans. So the APP basically is the one-year plan of the strategic plan. And you will see that in the two documents that we have presented, the strategic plan has actually two templates. The first template is actually, I'm talking about the APP, sorry. The first template talks about the elements that are sitting in our strategic plan. And then the second template under those particular programs talk about the APP that are actually divided in terms of different quarters and focusing on year one of the actual plan. As I said earlier, we've got a new vision, providing direct correctional services for a safer South Africa. Our mission is to contribute to a just, peaceful and safer South Africa through effective and humane incarceration of inmates, rehabilitation and social integration of offenders. Our values, the first one is development, integrity, effectiveness, equity, accountability, justice, security and central to that is Ubuntu. We also think that the values do not drive the organization. They drive those people who are within the organization. And in turn, those people are supposed to drive the organization. So values must be internalized. We have responsibility to internalize these values and add people in the, so that they have a meaning in the organization. I will take you through what are key issues around development. We are saying that we want to enable, for enablement and empowerment are critical in terms of development for both those who are incarcerated and those who are ensuring that rehabilitation takes place. We also say that we need to have faith in the potential of people, both as officials as well as offenders. We also need or have a responsibility to provide opportunities and facilities for growth for both officials as well as offenders. In terms of integrity, we are saying honesty occupies the centerpiece of the way we are supposed to be doing business. We are basically saying we want to disassociate ourselves from all forms of corruption and unethical conduct. There must be some business practices that we actually do. In terms of effectiveness, we're saying that there has to be productivity, there has to be best work methods that are actually put in place, and also make sure that the services that we continuously cater for are excellent. And under equity, we are committed in saying as a value, we are a non-discriminative organization. Affirmative action forms part of our mandate, as is the mandate and the law of the country. The gender equity becomes central to the way we do business, as well as the integration of disability issues forms part and parcel of how we conduct our business. Under accountability, we are saying that desire to perform well should actually drive our lives on a daily basis. We have to accept accountability for our behavior, and we also need to be committed throughout the process in everything that we do. In terms of justice, first we are dealing with those people who are already sentenced and judged. Our responsibility is to make sure that we provide them with fair treatment. Fair treatment for offenders, but also fair treatment for the officials that are actually within the department. There has to be justice for everybody irrespective, fairness and quality before the law takes center stage. In terms of security as a core business that sits with us, we're saying the safety of our employees, our fellows, as well as our community becomes central in the way we do business. In terms of Ubuntu, we are saying this is a very most noble principle and value that has been existing in the country for so many years, and we think that as a department, we really want to bring it back, we want to serve with kindness and humanity. So those are the core values that drive the organization, and this is what makes the organization keep going forward. In terms of values, the plans and actions must be conceived and implemented within the context of the organization's core values. In terms of the legislative framework, I said earlier that we derive our raison d'etre or raison of existence from the very progressive constitution of the Republic, and the police sections apply to our mandate 9, 10, 12, 27, 29, 31, and 35. So those are the sections that actually truly give us a directive in terms of what is required and what our mandate is all about and what we're supposed to be doing. We're also having the Correctional Services Act, number 1 of 1998. This is what details exactly what needs to happen in terms of our business. We're also complying in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, 51 of 1997. So these are core acts that actually drive our legislative mandate. And then we do have the white paper on the corrections in South Africa. This is the white paper that is of a transformative nature, the one that takes us to another level in terms of the way in which we are supposed to conduct our business. And then we do have the Correctional Services Amendment Act 25 of 2008, as well as relevant court rulings. We've got two critical court rulings that we're currently implementing, that is the Van Vink and the Van Vink cases, and this is still applicable in terms of the way in which we do our business. They effectively change our business processes in terms of how we're supposed to do certain things. We also have the draft working for remand detention, the Correctional Services Method Amendment Act 5 of 2011, as well as different policies that actually supports administration, but also that talks to what's contained in the different types of acts that we are administering. In terms of the situational analysis, we have, in this plan, covered the following areas. The performance environment of the department is clearly towards helping us to realize the ideal of the white paper, as I indicated, as well as the draft white paper on remand and detention. We're also focusing on the organizational environment. We are basically saying that we are a human resource-driven organization. Hence, the environment that we operate in should actually take care of the human resources that were actually managed. The other issue is the description of the planning process. You would know that there's been a continuation of different plans from 2011-2012. We had annual performance plan that was produced through a series of executive management sessions, and various decisions were taken. In early 2011, we drew some of the issues from the previous strategies. We focused on the five government outcomes. We looked into the vision of the minister and the vision of the national commissioner, as well as the transformation strategy that was developed in the year 2011. We, as an organization, we have what you call the logic model. This logic model, in the private sector, we call it a business model. This is basically what defines us, what clearly outlines our bottom line. So in terms of the CPS, within the government level, we are actually talking to outcome 3 of the 12 outcomes, which is to make sure that all people in South Africa are used and feel safe. And then the government level outcome is to make sure that they enhance public safety and reduce pre-offending. So we basically have 3 dedicated branches, as I said earlier, and each branch talking to a particular strategic objective. Now, branch number 1 clearly ensures that the effective criminal justice through effective management of remand processes. So all the remand issues that deals with the detention, the security of those, the safety, the humane conditions as stipulated in the Constitution are actually taking place at this branch level. And obviously, this branch contributes to the government level outcome, as well as making sure that the outcome number 3 is actually achieved. The second branch as well is to make sure that society is protected through incarcerated offenders being secured and rehabilitated. So we are basically providing a humane custody and healthy offenders. So all of this will actually be clearly stipulated in our plans, as I will present. And the last branch is to make sure that society is protected by offenders being properly reintegrated in the community as law-abiding citizens. So it deals with probationers, offenders, and the reintegration model that we actually have put in place. In terms of the organizational environment, we really had to look into issues related to staffing. We identified that there has been high staff turnover of critical posts, inadequate and inappropriate staffing patterns, and also identified the need to address entry-level appointments as there are currently challenges now, and also decisions to increase the annual intake, retention and attraction of skills also remains a challenge. Now, information technology. Previously, although I need to mention that there has been significant progress in the previous financial year in terms of putting IT systems in place. However, there were unstable and insecure ICT systems. There have been IT strategy and the information system plans, as well as the reduced number of consultants. So those are the issues that we picked up when we were actually doing an analysis of the organization. And other research issues, we looked into the implementation of the settlement agreement of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, Resolution Number 1 of 2007, and the remaining challenges. On this one, I also need to indicate that Minister early this year has given an instruction to establish a task team of both the department, PSA, as well as PAMCRU, to make sure that we deal with all outstanding issues that really create unnecessary tensions within the organization. And that testing is at work now. We actually made a presentation to the portfolio committee last week in terms of the work. Ministers continue to really update on it. And the intention is to clearly make sure that we clear all these outstanding labor relations matters between ourselves and our partners in the labor sector. We also focused into issues related to finance and procurement, identified inconsistencies in spending patterns. We looked into challenges in procurement and contract management. We looked into the issue of structure, the high level organizational structure, the new budget programs, which are currently comprised of 5 programs, which I will take the committee through. And we also looked into specific issues related to occupational specific dispensations, commonly known as OSDs. We looked into all approved OSDs that are implemented in accordance with relevant resolutions. So also this piece of policy forms part of the mandate of that particular ministerial team that is focusing on the outstanding issues in the organization. So normally, as we do study plan everywhere else, we do our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats exercise. We did exactly that. We had to make sure that we understand our legal framework that governs the department. We had to craft a new vision and a new mission. We set goals and outcomes at an organizational level, as well as we set performance indicators and targets. So basically, this plan has been crafted within context of the SWOT analysis. So as a department, we are committed to the following three core functions, as I said earlier. One is effective justice through effective management of remand processes. Societies protected through incarcerated offenders being secured and rehabilitated, and societies protected by offenders being reintegrated into the community as law-abiding citizens. As I said, those issues, those three goals talk to the mandate of the organization as clearly stipulated. The department, in terms of budget allocation, in terms of mid-term expenditure framework, in terms of estimate of national expenditure, it has five programs. And in those programs, we've got program number one, which is administration, that deals with all issues and allocations related to ministry, management, finance, internal audit, HR, office administration, and residential accommodation. Program two is actually a combination of security operations, offender management, remand detention, and facilities. I also need to say to the committee that you will see in terms of programs, there's a misalignment based on the program and the structure. Under many circumstances, you would find that a program is linked to a particular branch. But now in this case, because we're actually in the process of analyzing our structure, we have incarceration that have functions that are actually sitting under the chief operations officer as well as under the branch incarceration. So security operations was under the COO, offender management was under the CDC incarceration, remand detention was under CDC remand detention, and facilities also was under the COO. But those are the programs that we are currently sitting with. We are in process, we are in discussions with National Treasury, so that as we are going to be allocated for the next financial year, which is going to be the new electoral year, we have an opportunity for us to align our budget program with our organizational structure. And rehabilitation, we've got correctional programs, we've got offender development, psychological, social, and spiritual services. And the third program is nutritional services, health services, and hygienic services. And social integration is the same issue, parole administration, supervision, community integration, of the accommodation, and community corrections. Now, this plan is actually, they are not sitting as separate individual independent silo plans. There is a linkage between the strategic plan, the ATP, the operational plan, with the strategic risk register. We also have the spending plan as prescribed by the PFMA and treasury regulations. We have the HR strategic plan that informs the way in which we are supposed to manage our human resources. We also have the workplace skills plan that is basically focusing on making sure that our officials are skilled up to the expected and desired levels. Then we also have the service delivery improvement plan, which is championed by the DPSA and has to be part and parcel of each and every government department. We actually also have the national building plan. As you know, that we are actually responsible for facilities or centers, and part of our responsibility is to make sure that those that are under our care are actually living in good conditions, and the management of building and facilities becomes very critical. So there is this plan that looks to that. We also have a procurement plan that really outlines what needs to be for when, as well as the master information systems plan, which is basically your key IT plan that will assist us to advance to the level in which we want it. Now, I'm not going to really take the committee through this slide. It's a little bit technical, but just in short, what I needed to say is that the contribution that we do as a department, those that are financial, human, and material resources, at a very small level that we operate at, serves as inputs. And those inputs are then translated into activities, and those activities are tasks that we as personnel undertake to transform those inputs that I talked about into activities. And then, obviously, if you look into the activities and they are grouped together, they actually lead to outputs. And those will be the products and services that we actually produce. And that is actually taking place at an implementation level. Now, the most important thing what this slide is saying is that whatever we do has to have a particular result. And in this case, the result should be the outcomes. And remember, I spoke about the 12 outcomes of government, and I spoke on outcome number 3. Basically, it means all the efforts that we do as an organization are actually aimed for us to achieve those particular outcomes, and most importantly, those outcomes focus on us achieving the goal. Remember, the goal is to make sure that we contribute effectively in the reduction against crime and corruption, which is one of the key focus areas of government. Now, this is just a slide that clearly tells us that the strategic objectives must have an output, must have a key performance indicator, an annual target, the corporate target, and each and every objective must actually have either one or two of those objectives and the output, and then we'll have the KPIs. Depending on how many of them you would want to put in the plan, then we'll have the baseline, then we'll have the annual target that talks to the performance indicator. Either we have one or two of those, then we'll have your quarterly target that actually talks to the annual target. This is a breakdown of those annual targets into 4 different quarters. And on that note, I will move to the actual plans. And I will basically start with Program Administration 1, which will clearly focus on JITO. As I clearly indicated earlier, the program, those are the sub-programs and units that are going under administration. And the purpose of this program one is to provide leadership, strategic management, and administrative support to the department. The objectives, as I said, they are those that are sitting on the first page of the plan. We have to look at the baseline, we have to justify the program, and also link this program to any other outcome. So this program on administration is linked to outcome 4 of the 12 outcomes, which is the skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. This is actually an outcome that is shared among all government departments, currently challenged by the Department of Public Service and Administration. The CFO will take us through the budget. So what I will do, I will jump this, then she'll be able to take us through as soon as she is ready. So I will just focus on performance plan. In terms of administration, we've got IT, which is the indicator for this current financial year, will be to have an endpoint that will enable interoperability to the integrated justice system. So what IT says in the current financial year is that they need to put in place a business process re-engineering. So for the 4 quarters, there will be a breakdown of the documentation of the business processes. So 20% will be first quarter, 40, and the third quarter will be 100%, and by the 4th quarter, that project will be completed. The second one will have to have an integrated correctional management system. And then for 2013-2014, it's also the business process re-engineering, and broken it down in terms of percentage. So 20% will be for quarter 1, 40, 80, then the last 100% will be done on the third quarter. And as we approach the fact that as a department, we are playing a significant role into African Correctional Office, Correctional Services, we are actually appointed to chair the African Correctional Services Association, and we have a responsibility to create a secretariat that is capacitated and functional. And then we are saying in this financial year that we want to establish the ACSA offices, and the quotas there, it says we have to have the secretariat offices identified and secure and equipped for first quarter. Second quarter, we are appointing the principal officer. The third quarter, we are providing administrative staff to AXA and also ensure that the principal officer is appointed. And also the next quarter is to appoint the deputy principal officer. And finally, I'm just going to talk about the performance information. The CFO will be able to take a through. But in terms of performance information and the finance, the performance indicator is that the percentage of allocated budget is spent. And for the current financial year, it is clear that under expenditure must be limited to a quarter of the percentage of voted funds. So throughout the whole four quarters, we are saying that under expenditure will be limited to a quarter of a percentage of voted funds. The second performance indicator under finance is number of audit qualifications. We are saying in this current financial year, we want zero audit qualification with a reduction of emphasis of meters. And then our company target throughout the year is the zero audit qualification with reduction of emphasis of meters. Under human resources, it's still the same purpose, objectives, baseline, justification, as well as the link. I'm not going to get into the financials. But I will focus on the performance indicator, focusing on the percentage of funded posts that are filled. We are saying that HR for the current financial year, 97% of funded vacant posts will be filled against a total of 42,006. That will be based on actual vacancies, which are 2,232, total number of establishments less than the filled positions. We also need to note that the number of actual funded vacant posts is not because of various reasons, natural attrition and other things. So it will change from time to time. So what we are saying is that for the first quarter, we want to fill 90% of the 97% of those vacant positions, which is basically 124 posts. The second quarter, it will be 28%, which is 625 positions. The third quarter will be 28%, which will be 625 posts. And then the last quarter, we are going to be filling to 5%, which is going to be 556 of those that are vacant. Of course, consider the fact that there is continuous natural attrition. And in terms of training, number of officials trained the workplace skills plan priority. We are saying for the annual target, we want to train 50,000 officials in line with the work skills plan. And we are actually breaking that down into different quarters. The first quarter is 2,500, the next one is 7,100, and then the next one will be 3,500, therefore 2,000 in the last quarter. A number of movement areas where integrated employee health and wellness programs are rolled out. We are saying that in this current financial year, we have to make sure that an integrated health and wellness strategy is designed, approved and rolled out to health management areas. So basically, there is an indicator that for the first three quarters, we will do the rollout one management area, but for the last quarter, it will be two management areas. Under incarceration, the purpose of this program is to provide appropriate spaces and well-maintained physical infrastructure for safe and secure conditions of detention consistent with human dignity of inmates, personnel, and the public. And this is actually in line with strategic outcome 3. We are saying that, and I think this actually is it's for legal services. I'm sorry about this slide. The under legal services, which falls under administration, I think there was a mix of slides here. We are saying that those cases that are brought against the department needs to be defended. And within the year 2013, we want to defend 80% of those cases that are brought against the department. And our target is that for quarter one, we want to defend 60%, and it's accumulative, and quarter two is 70%, quarter three is 75%, and quarter four being 80%. Now going back to program two, we are saying that the percentage of inmates assaulted in correctional and remand detention facilities per year. In the current financial year, the 2% that we are focusing on, and then we break that 2% into 0.5% payout. There's a number against what we have actually indicated there. I'm not going to get into those percentages. In terms of percentage of drug-related violent incidents, we are basically saying that we want to reduce those incidences by 10% in the current financial year. And we'll have to keep that 10% throughout in every quarter continuously. In terms of unnatural deaths, percentage of unnatural deaths in correctional and remand detention facilities a year, we of course want to reduce it by 0.027%, and we'll have the breakdown of those 0.007 throughout four quarters. Those inmates who escape from the correctional and remand detention percentages, we want to test that percentage to make sure that in the current financial year we've got 0.32%, of which we want to break it down to 0.008 per quarter for the whole financial year. The number of new workspaces that are created by upgrading of facilities, our target is to have 471 additional bed space in the current financial year. And then we need to, because this is a building environment, so the projects that are taking place in the building environment sometimes are informed by the project plan, what needs to happen first. So we decided that we don't have target for quarter one, but for quarter two we've got 12 additional bed spaces created. For quarter three it becomes incremental to 435, and then for quarter four we'll be 24 bed spaces, which in total will be 421. In terms of the average length of time in remand detention, we are seeing that we want to reduce it by 2 days from the baseline, which will be calculated at the end of March. So our indication is that for quarter one, we want to reduce these 2 days, these days by 3 days for the first quarter, 6 days the next quarter, 9 days, and eventually 12 days for the last quarter, which is supposed to be the norm, in line with the plan. Percentage of those remand detainees with bail placed under non-custodial systems against the RDS with bail, we are saying in the current financial year, 11% of those RDS with bail placed under non-custodial systems against those with bail. And what you're saying is that for the entire 4 quarters, 11% of those with bail placed under custodial systems against those with bail. So we are going to continue to consistently keep 11% going forward. In terms of the well-being and remand detention approved and aligned with operational policies, we are in the current financial year, we want to have an approved white paper on remand detention. So the processes that will lead to us having this white paper will be public consultation by members of the honorable members of parliament and different structures that will do for the first two quarters, and then the third quarter will seek approval by Parliament, both houses, I guess, and as well as the last quarter will be the distribution of the white paper and the development of an implementation plan. We are also saying that the percentage of overcrowding in correctional services, we want to reduce that by 30% in the current financial year, and then what we're saying is that we'll keep the 30% the target for the next 4 quarters. Percentage of eligible offenders submitted by the CMC to the Correctional Service Parole Board, we are saying that in the current financial year, we want to have 92%. And in terms of quarterly targets, we want consistently keep the 92% throughout. And the percentage of offenders serving sentences longer than 24 months who have correctional sentence plans, we are saying in the current financial year, we are targeting 98%. So, and 98% will be consistent throughout the 4 quarters. In terms of rehabilitation, the purpose of this program is to provide offenders with need-based programs and interventions to facilitate their rehabilitation, social responsibility, human development, and ensure that they enable their social integration. This is in line with outcome number 3. And then it will be focusing on personal programs, offender development, psychological, social, and spiritual services. Now, in terms of those, that percentage of offenders with correctional sentence plans who completed the personal programs, we are saying in the current financial year, we need to keep it at 60, and we are breaking down this 60 into 15% charter, which in total should be 60% at the end of the financial year. And percentage of offenders who participate in educational programs as stipulated in the sentence plan. We are going in 2014 financial year, which is the current year, we want to decrease literacy baseline of the previous year by 2%. However, this does not necessarily mean that we cannot overachieve on this one. Our target is to actually achieve more than this 2% by means of the interventions that are clearly indicated the minister has already pronounced on and the department is actually working on in terms of making sure that offenders become literate. So, in terms of the quarterly targets, we are still looking to the literacy level, but that dissemination is actually taking place. The revision here is that the school terms, the university terms, the FE terms, the vehicle in terms of admission, so oftentimes that baseline is informed by those admission time frames, and that information is the one that is fed, and it will be fed as we go on. We also think that for the year 2014, adult education and training, we want to have 67.2. So, and on a target, this is not going to be a quarterly target, but to be able to measure the target on an annual basis, precisely because those are normally your year courses. In terms of the FET, further education and training mainstream, we are saying 1.4. And as well, we have to measure this target on an annual basis. So at the end of the year, we have an indication in terms of our contribution towards the target. The percentage of eligible offenders who participate in skills training and FET college programs, we are saying that once put in place the skills training programs, increase the baseline of the previous year, and then basically this we'll have to do an annual measurement of this target for both the SBT, like I said, with other programs. The center of inmates who are involved in psychological services measures against those who need psychological services. We are saying in the year 2018 to the 14th financial year, we must improve by 5% percentage of inmates who are involved in psychological services against the baseline of the previous year. Right? Now, we are saying that for the next 4 quarters, we will have to do a 1.25 increase on the baseline. And percentage of those offenders that are incarcerated and those who are sentenced to correctional supervision to be involved in social work services, within the current financial year, was increased to 56.9%, and we have broken it down in terms of 14% per quarter. The percentage of those who benefit from spiritual services should be measured against those who need spiritual services. And our target is to have 52% of those, and we are only breaking those quarterly targets by 13% per quarter. In the care, we do have the certain nutritional, health, and hygienic services, and the purpose of this program is to provide needs-based care services aimed at maintaining the well-being of the inmates of those who are in our custody. And this program actually links to outcome number 2, which is championed by the Department of Health, which is a long and healthy life for all South Africans, and outcome number 3, which we actively contribute as member of the JCPO cluster. In terms of that, we are still in terms of the percentage of food service units with the required resources of the provision of food services, we are saying in this current financial year we need to monitor the provision of required resources, which means your human equipment, your human resources, equipment and facilities in the food service unit. So what we do in this current financial year, we'll continuously on a quarterly basis monitor the provision of this in terms of those issues that I've indicated. In terms of percentage of inmates tested for HIV, our target is that we need to increase it to 50%. The first, second, third, and fourth quarter targets would be 12% consistently, so we can be able to achieve this 50% at the end of the financial year. The percentage of inmates initiated on antiretroviral therapy, which is the ART, and percentage of inmates with CD4 count below 350 who are on ARV treatment, percentage of inmates diagnosed with mental illness and placed on medical treatment, as well as the CDQH. We are saying in terms of those specific issues, we will have, for those on the ART, 54%, and we will continuously and consistently have it as 54%. And in terms of those with CD4 counts below 350, we'll have the annual target of 94, and we'll keep it throughout as 94 throughout the whole 4 quarters. And those that were diagnosed with mental illness and are placed on medical treatment want to achieve the 100% target, and we'll keep the 100% on a continuous basis per quarter. In terms of CB cure rate, we are saying that the annual target should be 75, and we have to consistently have that 75% throughout the 4 quarters. The number of management areas with effective management of healthcare waste services, we are saying as a department that for the current financial year, we need to put in place 18 additional management areas with contracted healthcare waste services, and what we have to do for the next 4 quarters, we need to monitor the management of healthcare waste management services. We also have to evaluate the impact of contracted healthcare waste services. And for the next 4 quarters, quarter one will approve the impact, and then we'll make sure that implementation for next 2 quarters, then we'll provide a report in terms of this particular indicator. Under social reintegration, which is the last program, the purpose of this program is to provide services focused on offenders' preparation for release, effective supervision of offenders placed under the systems of community corrections, and facilitation of social reintegration into their communities. This is clearly linked to outcome number 3, which is our outcome. And we are saying that the performance indicator, which is the percentage of parole cases in which victims of crimes make representation. For the current financial year, we are saying that we are increasing it by 4.43%, and we want to keep this target at quarterly target 4.43% throughout the whole 4 quarters. The next indicator is the percentage of cases submitted by the CFCs and considered by the parole board. We are doing, we're increasing it to 94%, and then throughout the 4 quarters we want to maintain the 94%. The percentage of parolees without violations, our target is to increase it to 79.9%. And then what we need to do is that for the first quarter, we need to increase it to 79.6, then next quarter 0.7, 0.8, and 0.9, so that we can be able to achieve our annual target. In percentage of probationers without violations, we are therefore saying that we are increasing it by 8%, and then, we are using the 80% baseline information. That of those probationers without violations from the total that is sitting. But we're basically saying that we'll have to have an increase of 79.25 for the third quarter, 79.50 for the next quarter, increasing to 79.75, eventually to 80%, which we want to achieve as a target. Operationalization of electronic measuring systems for persons under the systems of correctional, community corrections. We are going for the current financial year, we are preparing the electronic monitoring rollout and implementation, and we are placing 500 offenders under the electronic monitoring. In the first quarter of this financial year, we are recommending the electronic monitoring rollout. We have put in place a process in place through the MTFB to National Treasury to make sure that we secure funds. And then while we do this, on the second quarter, we are going to finalize the draft policy and procedure on the electronic monitoring. We'll do consultations with other regions, various branches, as well as cluster departments, because as a cluster, there's an interest in this most important electronic monitoring system as a means to cap reoffending and the other related issues. And the third quarter is the approval of policy and procedures on electronic monitoring, and within quarter number 4, we are going to implement this policy and procedures. In terms of halfway houses, we want to have a number of halfway houses established as a support system for reintegration of offenders. And the other aspect is that we need to roll out service level agreements for 6 halfway houses. And as an annual target, we'll make sure that we measure this at the end of the financial year. The indicator will improve awareness strategy on alternative non-custodial sentences and measures under the system of community corrections. For the current financial year, we say we need to have an approved awareness strategy on alternative non-custodial sentences and measures under the systems of community corrections. And what we'll do, we'll continue to, for the first quarters, we'll do the draft awareness strategy on non-custodial strategy and measures. We'll have to develop them. The next quarter we'll consult. The third quarter we'll get approval, and the last quarter we'll do an implementation. There is a number of victim offender dialogue sessions. I'm sure we've already started seeing them on media, very critical intervention, and we are basically saying that as a department, we need to have 8 huge VOD sessions in a year. However, there are a number of VOD sessions that are taking place throughout the centers continuously, but these are 8 major key, which minister will be driving them actually. And then in terms of those, we decided to have 2 major VOD sessions per quarter, continuously throughout the whole 4 quarters. That is basically what is planned. And in terms of the indicator of decentralization of community corrections, we are saying that we have to have an approved concept document of the decentralization of community correction services. So for the next quarters, we'll do the draft concept document on the decentralization, that is the development. The next quarter, we'll make sure that we circulate the draft and consult with the branches. And then the next quarter, we'll consolidate. And then the fourth quarter, we'll submit for approval. On that note, I would like to thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The next part will be presented by the acting CFO. And in my introduction, I forgot to mention that some of the regional commissioners are meeting the portfolio committee. And as soon as they finish, they will join us in this meeting. So it will not be a sign of disrespect when we walk in late. Thank you very much.
Chair, also, we're not encroaching on the Department of Arts and Culture by having too many acting. No,
I know
this, but it's actually a plus for the department in that we always say that a good organization is the one that keeps those inside happy and those outside attracted. So quite a number of departments are attracted to correctional services. So they recruit and with straight methods and other methods. But all people who have left here generally go to become senior people elsewhere. The CFO has gone to defense. The EDG strategic management is now a DG in economic development. So that's how it happens. People see a lot of talent here, and that's why we are having acting, and you'll have seen the adverts. We've advertised those positions, and so the people will no longer be acting in a few months' time. Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Matthew.
The only person that was permanent since we started this was the CFO. All of them have been since we started. And we were surprised that today we have him stars. But we want to thank the minister for the explanation.
Chair, I think that we are going to discuss it. when it comes to discussion.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Continue.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chair, and the Honourable Member of the Committee. I'll be taking the committee through the estimates of national expenditure for 2013. Briefly, we will touch on the overall allocation for the department for the 2013 MTF and highlight the reprioritization that the department embarked on during the budgetary processes and the budget build and reductions over the 2013 MTF. And will also indicate what numbers of personnel are funded in the 2013 EME, in the details of funded tracking survey, and will take to the committee the allocations per program and also the allocations per economic classification, and will briefly indicate what allocations are according to the different programs per region, per program, and also per economic classification. And in terms of the table that will follow, as table one in the following slide, we indicate in the departmental allocation over the certain NHS period. Seems to say that our allocation for the current financial year, which is 13-14, is 18.7 billion, which is a 5.9 increase from the baseline of 2012-13, which was 17.7 billion. And in 2014-15, we have an allocation of 19.7 billion, which is a 5.2 increase from 13-14. And in the outer year, which is the last year of the outer year, in 2014-15, we've got 20.8 billion, which is a 5.5 increase from the baseline of 14-15. In terms of the budgetary process itself, there were budget cuts that were approved by the cabinet and were implemented over our MTF allocation. For 13-14, we had a budget cut of 237.6 million. For 14-15, it was 458 million. And the last outer year, 504.5 million. And all the cuts I've indicated, Honourable Chair, were effectively implemented across programs. And in terms of the new additional allocations, which will bring us to the net effect as per the second bullet of 18.7, 19.7, and 20.8, it is after the main baseline of 2012 minus the budget cut is approved, plus the additional allocations as we received them. Mainly the additional allocations that were received by the department are for the improvement in conditions of services, which is mainly the salary adjustment of employees in the department. For 2013-14, we had an additional 222 million, increasing to 278.4 million in 2014-15, and in the last outlay 486.6 million. So effectively what we say is the current allocation is taken into account what has been reductions as I've indicated, and also the additional allocations, mainly for improvement in conditions of services. It only affects the compensation of employees across all five programs, because all five programs have got the human capital as a department and a labor intensive department. As indicated by the acting CDC, the allocations in the department are in support of the three of the 12 national outcomes. Mainly the focus outcome of the Department of Correctional Services is outcome three, as alluded to by the acting CDC, that all South Africans are and they feel safe. But the other two outcomes, as indicated, we do contribute to the outcome around the improved quality of education. We talk about reading for leadership, we talk about formal education, we talk about skills training, we do directly contribute to the particular outcome, and also to the outcome which talks to long and healthy life of all South Africans, because we've got health services within the department, as indicated, under care programs, in terms of HIV and AIDS as a priority, communicable diseases, non-communicable disease management, we do directly also contribute to that particular outcome, but the main focus is outcomes, as indicated. But over and above that, as a department, we consider our high-risk authorities, as indicated too, which we then, with regards to the whole planning process, took into account when we prepared our estimates of national expenditure, and we also linked the medium-term planning and budgeting processes. We're not saying we are perfect. We're fully conscious that we have not reached a place where effectively the strategic processes, planning processes are well aligned as ideally one would love to see them to the budgetary processes. We still have instances where the budgetary processes are kind of leading in certain instances. We can finalize those well before we finalize sometimes the planning processes, the different processes, whether to long-term planning, whether to short long-term planning. It's a process that we gradually are trying to improve on, such that we come to a place where, indeed, our planning processes are finalized first before the money processes. Not that budgeting is not planning itself, but that we do not let the money first lead. We let the other components lead, and then the money then fit well into that. But the balancing processes is what we have embarked on. If you look at our strategic plan, we talk about also the relevant patch in terms of our strategy, which if you look at the previous strategic plan, it's one part that as a department we did not pronounce on, but we're not saying that is correct, but it's what we're waiting on. The other approaches that we as a department and also in the JCPS that we're talking to in terms of the estimates of national expenditure linked to our strategic plan and APP is the improvement in terms of our remaining education management, offender population management, improve offender involvement in offender labor, increase in offender involvement in rehabilitation programs, and enhance management of parole systems. ACDC has spoken well around those issues. Table 1 indicates the baseline of allocations that have indicated the net effect, and out of the baseline allocations that have been tabled by the Honorable Minister of Finance for both 21, which is correctional services, indicating the 18 billion increasing in the last outer year to 20.8 billion. But included in that 18 billion, 19 billion and 20 billion are what we normally refer to as earmarked funding. That is funding that the accounting officer may not reprioritize without consultation to Treasury and also going back to having services protected funding. So included in that space, I think I will have protected funding, which basically members would recall sometime in 2006, we had funds that used to sit in the department, public works, devolved to the different levels within the national sphere and provincial sphere. For those departments where, for example, if you talk your municipal services, those funds are centralized in public works. So in 2006, the conscious decision was taken that the money must be devolved to the different departments. So in DCS, what is included in 18.7 billion for 2014 from the devolution funds from DPW is a 1.7 billion, increasing to a 1.9 billion in the outer year, which includes accommodation charges because the building by right and by public works money that we occupy as a department, that are those are owned by government are effectively owned by DCS. So we pay 8% each of our space that we occupy to the Department of Public Works, but the money is protected. So effectively public works would bill us for occupying our correctional centers and any other buildings that we occupy. And some of the buildings we are leasing, and we're leasing office space, we also leasing some member accommodation, and for the leases, we got 75 million, increasing to 83 million in the outer year. Municipal services, as indicated, was in our case. Municipal services used to be centralized in the Department of Public Works. After devolution, municipal services in the department, 136 million, increasing to 816 million. It is one area in our discussions with National Treasury and in our discussions with Public Works that we have agreed that we do need to find a system to better manage municipal services. Currently, as a department, our municipal services, Public Works is paying the bill and giving us back, and for that they are charging a commission, a certain commission for that to pay a particular percentage to public for another that particular service. The intention for the department was to give an option at the time of devolution whether would let public works continue with the service and would pay a particular commission because we didn't have a structure, in other words, physical hands to actually do the work in the because the work was proven done by public works. Or create structures and continue to do the services on our own. So later on I will indicate in the slides the capacity that we're trying to put in place in the future is to be able to take that function fully to be done in the Department of Correctional Services, in other words, indirectly with the different municipalities reconcile the accounts ourselves. We do acknowledge again it is an area where you would have some form of wastage because if the taps are not working well, water is dripping effectively the same more. So it's an area that we're saying probably we need to do more in terms of being able to handle that. Repairs and maintenance, should repair the maintenance specifically of government-owned buildings, 199 million, increasing to 217 million in the outer year. And then we have, lastly, which is an earmark funding, which is not devolved, it's part of the devolved funding. It's earmark funding, which is in our baseline, but protected for the construction, major rehabilitation, upgrading of our centers, 604 million. increasing to decreasing to 603 million. So first year of MTF increasing to so fast, a very bad increase, and decreasing to 603. I will indicate why the decrease. I have indicated earlier on that the way budget reductions that a government department we had to implement given the economic climate of the country. As I've indicated, that there has been a process of reprioritization, as the Minister of Finance had put it, that we need to do more with less. After the submission that we submitted during the budgetary processes, we had then to reprioritize. I've indicated that in the department we didn't have enough project management capacity to be able to pay the bills or to take over the functions that are done by public works that ordinarily we have an option of being able to do, so we can be able to even save the commission that we are currently paying to the Department of Public Works and reprioritize that funding to other critical projects within the department. So as a department, what we then did was to write the National Treasury to request shifting of funds so that we can be able to create some posts for project management and also for the municipal services within the department. The Honourable Minister did approve the structure, which then was sent to National Treasury. In other words, in terms of that, we didn't get more funding for the allocated money what we then sent. Given this allocated money, we're requesting that money be reprioritized from goods and services to create more posts and compensation of employees. And given that we had a structure that was created and approved, and created 95 posts over the 2013 NDF, that we can be able to better manage our projects and also to be able to carry some of the functions that, as I've indicated, public works is carrying on our behalf. And we got the approval, and then our structure increased from 41,911 to 42,006. And the other part that is critical for us that we embarked on in terms of reprovision of the budget, we had the pronouncement by the minister with regard to the uniform for remand detainees. In that regard, we had to buy materials because in terms of the actual sewing, which utilized the foreign labor within our facility. Due to the fact that with the buy material, we go on what is normally termed as transversal contracts, which is contracts that the National Treasury themselves would, after consulting all applicant departments, mainly to be us, the Department of Defense and SAP, in terms of buying bulk and also to ensure that the state is able to get some economies of scale. And there were delays in terms of the procurement processes. Once the tender was finalized, one of the service providers was found to have misrepresented the facts. Ultimately, after the legal opinion, the contract was cancelled at National Treasury, so there was a process of readjustment. Now, caught in between the financial years, we had the allocations in 2012-13, and we had planned that the remaining material would have been bought in 2012-13. So in 2013-14, we didn't provide for that allocation, so we had to reprioritize given the re-advent of the tender and the finalization of the tender that would have meant the contract would be effective from 3rd of April 2013, which is the new financial year. So what we then did was to reprioritize from own allocation an amount of 30.9 million, so as to be able to supplement that particular tender. And we did that from the branch Egito and Program 1. So that's the position that we effected at the department. And the other 13 million was to align for the telecom VPN for access control from security to be under the branch management, branch Egito, under sub-program management in program administration. And again, there were further cuts that were communicated, as I indicated, due to the economic climate of the country. Were in terms of the letter to the Central National Treasury, all government departments who had to reprioritize and have a reduction in baseline. And for DCS, the standard budget reduction was 50 million in 1340, 50 in 1415, and 70 million in 1516. And those three amounts of the MTF were all cut from the compensation of employees, but not reducing the numbers of posts that are funded. So we had on other parts that the executive management has got a discretion in terms of allocating and paying the benefits. Mainly we reduced those allocations from the merit hours, not completely taking off all amounts allocated in merit hours, but reducing that because we do have the prerogative funded post and not have so much negative impact over the implementation of the different critical projects and different programs within the department. In terms then of the baseline reductions that have been affected, we indicate you in that slide from 2014 to the outer year, that in the current year, the total that has been reduced is 238 million, increasing to 458 million, and last year to 584 million. So those have all been affected. The premium that you've reported in the estimate of national expenditure as published by the Minister of Finance indicated that we move from 41,911 as I indicated post, and as of September, which is mid year, we had 1,507 posts which were carried additional to the establishment, and also we indicating the 95 posts which made the department to increase its funding establishment from 41,911 to 42,006. As I've indicated, 95 mainly will be under facilities to take care of the project management gap that we have long identified, and also to ensure that the function of the municipal services comes back to the department. In terms of the post, if I may clarify, the post that encourage additional to the establishment. What we have as a department, you would have contract workers that are appointed within the department. You would have learnership for the recruitment process of our own security officials, operational officials. We expect them to go to college before they become qualified. In the 3 months in college, 9 months on-job service, so that after that 12-month period, they should be able to be accredited by SAFSITA. So normally when you appoint them, you don't appoint them straight to permanent posts. They are appointed on contract, and therefore we create posts that will be additional to the establishment. But as and when we're filling the posts, we see you absorb the new recruits, we will move them from additional to the establishment to the permanent establishment. Maybe I just wanted to just clarify that, that it is posts that you would normally create to be able to effect payments for contract workers, leadership, and interns as well. In terms of the program, the yearly allocations for 2014, mainly we're told to concentrate in terms of that particular current financial year, indicating that the main increase, which will cut across basically all the five programs, as we've indicated, that mainly what we have done in the department was we didn't receive what we call normally an injection for any further investment in whatever areas in the department. Safe to say that we would see a particular increase in whatever activity, in whatever sub-program, put aside the competition of employees for that one, we will give money for even a rather increase, which is the improvement in conditions of service, but the other increases in activity has been mainly from us reprioritizing what already was in our business to be able to deliver on those critical projects that I have indicated for the remand detainee uniform. So cutting across all programs, we wouldn't get there for what we call real financial injection from outside the baseline, but it is what we have juggled around in the baseline to be able to meet the requirements of the department. Mainly in terms of program line compensation employees due to the improved conditions of services, also in terms of traveling subsistence, we have increased that was mainly the activity for transport, government transport is sitting under program one, and as we all know that the fuel costs have been soaring, so what we've done then, because we didn't get additional funding for an abnormal over and above inflation increases. So what the allocation letter was sent to all accounting officers is that for all items that will be well above the inflation, you shall reprioritize and ensure that you still fund them. So we had to reprioritize to be able to get through the transport costs and also for the food provision, because normally when it comes to fuel and also food inflation, normally over the past many years, I've forgotten since when, over the past many years, over a decade, the inflation in those two main items has always been above the normal average inflation in the country. As indicated that the budget cuts have been erected across programs, as indicated in terms of program one, we've reduced it by 55.2 million, increasing to 228.4 million in 2014-15, and in the latter year, 216 million. Under program incarceration, incarceration is one of the programs that is highly labor intensive in the department, because that way our core with regards to security assists. So mainly our allocation there goes to compensation of employees. mainly, again, the increase in program 2 is under improvement in conditions of service, and the growth in expenditure under facility sub-program, it is due to the three centers that are in Western Cape, Bradley, Ceres, and Van Rensdorp, which are set to be operational in 2012. The construction part has been finalized. And what was outstanding at the end of the financial year in 2013 is the cabling, which is the IT infrastructure, so that we can be able to bring those centers into operation. Again, in terms of the sub-program on offender management, in terms of this program, there will be an improved work of case management committees, and it is one area that the department is currently looking at in terms of improving the resourcing of all CMCs across all centers. But it is an issue that we will have also to go and table within National Treasury, because ordinarily, if you look at our funding pool, we're not talking to a functional CMC structure that will be able to deliver what we want in the department. Currently, we are making mischief with available resources. And so it goes to many of our students. Because if you look at after 2009, the department, when we went and implemented the occupational recommendations for professional officials, members were given choices, and what you had then was, in terms of many support services, some officials, most officials, opted to go to the security stream. So what we have now in terms of support services is an arrangement kind of scenario where members will shift, but after 2-3 hours, having done the back work that needs to be done inside the correctional center, would then move to offices to do your logistics work, do your personnel work, do your finance work. So currently that's how we function. We find that those members, because they're working, shift and then they get off, and then for in other administrative setups, you would have them to kind of make shift with what we have as a department. So it's one area that we identified that we need to pick up as a department. Under program rehabilitation, again, the bar goes to combination of employees, and that way we have our largest program being offender development, as indicated by the acting CBD, in terms of our formal education, in terms of our informal education and skills training for our offenders. That's the program that would house all of that. And again, in terms of looking at that particular program, we have challenges in terms of feeling of vacant posts, because that's where your psychologist would be, so all the critical skills are fitted. And if one may indicate, Honourable Chair, each of the skills is not an issue that would only affect directly the Department of Correctional Services. It's one Department of Correctional Services that would get all these other skills that in all other government departments would get in the Department of Correctional Services. So teachers that are in basic education or in Department of Higher Education, we find them in DCS. We talk nurses, we talk doctors that are in the Department of Health, we find them in DCS. So the issue of skills does have an impact within the department. It's not that those posts are not funded. We are not able to fill those posts to the level that we have. We are not able to maintain the target 97% of field schools with regards to these skills. It's an area that we've acknowledged, but an area also that we are attending to as a department in terms of those other departments that the department has, in terms of what services can those departments render and assist the Department of Correctional Services. While our main mandate is security and rehabilitation, but if you look at the rehabilitation component, that's where those skills become very critical and very important. But again, this particular program, the main increase there would be with regards to issues of compensation and labor improved condition of service. If I may also touch the issue around skills of headhunting, we do at the department encourage that. But in the process of encouraging headhunting, what the process does not mean is that if we have headhunt, for example, for a medical doctor, it doesn't mean the department will settle for anything less than a medical doctor. It doesn't mean that if, for example, a department has an indication that, you know, here's a CV, this person can be high-handed, and look at the CV, the person has gone to medical school but is not fully qualified doctor, hasn't done the community service as a requirement that is set by the Department of Health. But we do get those instances where what we get sometimes is it's falling short of what every department can be able to implement. It doesn't mean reduce or compromise the basic minimum requirements are set, just because we're saying that we have a problem with regard to skills, socially, as to other skills and the medical doctors. terms of still program rehabilitation, you have indicated psychological, social, and spiritual services, sub-program, mainly they, we're talking also in terms of the expenditure charge, the increase in compensation of employees, but also in terms of goods and services, what we have provided for as a department is to ensure that we're able to buy additional material supplies, transport costs, mainly for rehabilitation, and that's where you would get a lot of movement, and security also a lot of movement, and community corrections, because of the visitations and all that. So the transport part does play a role in terms of the increased costs for those particular programs and sub-programs. But in terms of the payment for capital assets, what the department would do, we then reprioritize own funding to be able to start the process of recapitalizing our own production workshops countrywide. We are not going to be able to finalize that with the 13-14 financial year, but what we've done currently is to say over the next 3 years or so, how much as a department within our own representation can we be able to achieve in ensuring that all dilapidated workshop equipment, agriculture equipment, we are able to replenish and to replace. It's a cycle when it comes to the Department of Correctional Services. If you do not invest in workshops, you do not invest in agriculture, then what it means is that we'll see lesser offender labor, and that's not what we want the department. Our priority is that we have increased offender labor, but indirectly, if we do not invest in that area of production workshops and agriculture, it will directly affect our levels of offender labor. Not only that, when it comes to production workshops and agriculture, it does affect the revenue that the department is generating and centralizing the national revenue fund. Because if you look at what we, as a department, mainly are generating as a revenue, it is what we manufacture in our workshops, the center that we are selling to government departments, whether it's a provincial or we've got clients in different provinces, that departments that buy our uniform, whether it is that by our feature, or whatever equipment that we're manufacturing, whether you talk the trailer that we're manufacturing and selling, so if you do not invest in agriculture and production workshops, it does have impact on the department. Also, when it comes to agriculture, if you do not replenish the obsolete equipment there, it does affect our own self-sufficiency as a department. So there's a lot that you produce as a department that we do not produce outside. Whether you talk dairy products, whether you talk meat, different types of meat, be it beef, be it poultry, and all of that, we do produce ourselves. Whether you talk crops and all of that. So it's one important aspect that as a department we want to ensure to focus on so as to be able to ensure that we increase, rather than decrease, but we increase the offer labor, increase the revenue generation in the department, and lastly, being able to increase the self-sufficiency of the department and somehow reduce, when it comes to food or rations, the levels of what to procure outside of the department. In terms of program care, again, the bulk of what goes in terms of this particular program goes to nutritional services and health services, nutritional services, both in terms of what we've outsourced as a department, but not all management areas are outsourced. Some management areas are doing the nutritional services and own resources. But in terms of also outsourced services, one part that I need to highlight to the committee is that when it comes to the food provision, the contract of the department is saying first and foremost the service provider shall look at what the department is producing before procuring outside. And the service provider then buys from the department. So we have a service provider that will buy our own produce before they then look outside. What everyone is supposed to be doing is to buy what we do not produce internally at the department. So that's one aspect that for us is quite critical, that we're managing with passion as a department. And in terms of the reduction for this particular program, we decreased from, starting from 49.8 million to 64. I must indicate as well that in terms of the programs with direct cost like a program, rehabilitation to a certain extent, program care and program security to a small extent. There was a special remission last year. And if you reduce those, the cost driver, the main cost driver in the Department of Correctional Services, which is the inmates, to a partial extent in terms of rent value, smaller extent for us, it is the public and probationers. So with regard to the special remission, if you then an inmate that was incarcerated sent to Iparu, then the department will have reduced cost burden on the budget. then heard is that even the prospect in financial year after the social remission, in the adjustment estimates that were used by the Minister of Finance, there was a reduction in our baseline there during the special remission cost, taking into account that your main cost driver has decreased. Therefore, in terms of only direct cost, not indirect cost, but direct cost, there should be some form of cost reduction that has been expected from last financial year, which is prospecting over the MTF. And then in terms of Table 3, Honourable Chair, so program social security, which is the last program social integration, also about a larger number of members there. So the bulk of expenditure goes to concession of employees, and due to concession employees, then the increase in the allocation that we got for improving conditions of service is one program that had the allocation. Also, in terms of the OECs that have been implemented, if you then do cover over the 7 period, the increase mainly it is because of the increase in the new salary regime of our members. Again, as I've indicated earlier on, it's one program that utilizes each vehicles quite a lot because of the visits that our members must make to the parolees and the probationers. So it felt cost does play a critical role in terms of indirect human cost driver there. So we had to ensure that within the abnormal inflation adjustment, if you will, that we do prioritize to be able to give a social integration a fair share and not necessarily give what has been prescribed in the MTF guideline by National Treasury. In the following slide, we're indicating allocations per program, as I've indicated, Honourable Chair, for the different financial years, administration, incarceration, care, social reintegration, and also indicating how the makeup of those particular programs over the MTF and also what percentages they're increasing over the MTF. In terms of economic classification, with regard to compensation of employees, the budget allocation for 13.4 billion increasing to 13.3 and to 14.1 billion. Mainly the increase in terms of compensation of employees is due to the improvement in conditions of service and the 95 posts that were additionally created. In terms of goods and services, the 5.1 billion, 13.14, 5.3, and increasing to 5.6 billion. And the average is 3.9% over the MTF, and if you look at the inflation, it's well above the 3.9%. In terms of transfers, 77 million, decreasing to 75 million, and increasing to 79 million. We had to, again, prioritize the, in terms of what we have, because in terms of that particular transfer, mainly what to put in the department and transfer is our skills development levy to SASITA, which is a transfer payment. The second one, it is the attrition service benefits when people leave the department due to whether it is resignations or retirement. We have to pay service benefits paid under transfer. And the last component is the gratuity that we pay to our own offenders, because as they give us offender labor, there's some small stipends that we do provide to our offenders who only those that render offender labor, not everyone else, but only those that render offender labor, they do get some small stipends. And also when we release offenders, and not all of them, their families will come and provide take the phones or bus fares. So as a department, when an offender does not have money to go back home, and as when they are released, the department does give them a small monetary provision to cover the cost of whatever mode of transport that will take them home. Normally it's just small amounts. If you are, for example, incarcerated in Victoria Central and you are released and you stay in Manila, we give you a tax fare from a postman, a taxi ring to Mamelodi, and then so that you ensure that at least you did go. It's very cheap, very cheap. That's correct, it's very cheap if you compare it to the cost of incarcerating a person per day. In terms of allocation for capital assets, 1.1 billion in 13-14, decreasing from 986 million, so it's supposed to be 9.986 million, and increasing slightly to 988 million in the 15-16 financial year. In terms of the table, which is table 4, indicating the allocations of the MTF and the percentages that are applicable for the different financial years. And then what we then indicated, Honourable Chair, in this particular slide, how much is allocated under the different programs in Telefon, and how much is sitting under the different regions of the department, about six regions, which is housing, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, LRN, Free State, Northern Cape, regions for the department. But for amounts allocated in head office, we thought that we need to clarify why the bulk that is sitting there, because if you then look just at the plans, you will think that, you know, head office is just having a lot of fat. But head office, there's some funds that are centralized, that are not decentralized to the different regions, but are held centrally, under the different program managers at head office. And one of them is what we talked about earlier on, the devolved funding that is sitting under head office. And also in terms of the capital works program, which is under incarceration, if you look there, it's sitting under head office. And also the amount for the two multi facilities, the one in Mangaung and the other one in Lemen, they are also sitting in head office. They're not allocated to different regions. So we thought that we should clarify that, but we are indicating that that main care program, how much goes to each region, and in total how much goes to each region as the last column there under total. So if you look, for example, in Gauteng, Gauteng's allocation for 1340 is 2.9 billion, and there mainly how members should read this slide to look at the number of inmates that are sitting, for the main cost arises are inmates, followed by our own members. This is one of the main cost arises that we concede as a department, both inmates and the parole and supervision cases. So based on that, we apply the per capita and then allocate to different regions. But the arrangement that we have with the treasury and also within the department is that, because when you plan, you have a particular number of projected number of inmates, projected number of supervision cases and so forth. But the arrangement is that should then the cost drivers in the department of personal says whatever increase in it, then we made an approach national treasury to go and negotiate. But also in terms, because it's not only that the numbers of inmates will only increase at times, which decrease as well, is that if they do so and they do so with so much of variance, the department does think that, and therefore that money would become available within the department for reprioritization. Of course, taking cognizance that you need to be looking at this not only as the Department of Correctional Services, but to look at the whole IGS, because we are at the receiving end of the whole IGS process, whilst the other departments they initiate and ensure that they deposit to a department. So when we do that, we don't do it over the NGF, we normally do it in here, such that we are able to still contain whatever has been budgeted over the NGF areas. The last slide, Honourable Chair, we're indicating, again, allocations per region, according to the economic classification, which will balance out effectively if you look at all that. But for Program 1, deliberately, we had just to indicate what's sitting there. Mainly, if you look at Program 1, was normally an assumption that we too heavy in administration. It is basically because of centralized funding, which has got nothing to do with administration, and that's what we've been saying. It's got nothing to do with administration. There are more services in the whole department. If you look at the services, municipal services, it's not municipal services for offices. It's municipal services for all centers in corrections facilities, in community corrections offices. But that allocation, because it is both money, project money, is sitting under the office. What the department has done, including Honorable Chairman, if you remember in the previous years, we used to have certain allocations sitting also in program and within the department. Now, we're not talking for service funding. For example, we used to have money for stores, if you're talking about supplementing the stores for bullets and all of that, admissions and all of that. Those were sitting in the program money under stores. So the department then took a conscious decision to say that these effectively, we cannot claim that they are at the same level in which you're talking municipal services that is devolved funding. We then had an approval from the accounting officer to actually devolve those funding from the DDS Program 1 administration to the relevant program, which mainly was Program 2, which is incarceration, and also to a certain extent Program 3. There was some money for replenishing stores, for new workshops and all of that. They were sitting under Program 1 under stores as a department. So we've done that cleansing in terms of our administration with regard to monetary part, which we think would better reflect our accreditation program. We're still not saying that it is perfect in the sense that we still have the devolved funding, which came for the old department sitting under Program 1. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, who can engage with the presentation? Hello.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the first one is the issue of FD. I really want an explanation. You see, but also an explanation where is the
the commissioner. Oh, no, because I hear that there's now a CFO and a COO. I don't know this new issues. Where is the commissioner? Because I only see the minister here, and there's an acting commissioner. That is the first one. If I can get explanation on that. You see, Chair, in this acting business, and I want to tell the minister, you see Nandi, I know Nandi for 19 years now. For 19 years. She's now acting as the CEO. But why are we not, and I'm making an example of her. There are many people in correctional services who will act for years in correctional services. I have said this many a times. And when appointments come, people from outside come and be appointed. The very same, I'm making an example of Nandi. I'm not talking to her. I'm making an example of her. Then the new person that will be appointed, then Nandi must teach and monitor and help that person. I'm saying the 241 persons, it is a case. I found one years ago in PE, I think in St. Albans. He was head of prison there. For 10 years, he was acting in that position. But then, the post was advertised and somebody else was appointed. I really, you know, that one I can't understand. Because if this person was acting for 10 years, and the prison was running smooth, why, if he was not effective, why not changing in the first 6 months or whatever? But now, you see, and it also goes with the morale. If a person knows that I'm not going to, but I'll ask follow-up questions, Chair. Let us just get this one, this answer, yeah.
No, thank you. I think we're sitting more on the same side there. I'll pride myself with the people you work with, you find there, you find in the department. If you live in 5 years, in whatever number of years, those people must have advanced. Otherwise, why are they there? They can't just stand still. You don't want to find a situation like an inmate, say. An inmate who is doing 25 years, he says, sir, you found me here, you leave me here. So whatever you are saying doesn't really mean much to me. And it's a fact, but with personnel, just for morale and everything else, there should be mobility. Let's start with the housekeeping. The National Commissioner is in that committee of DGs that is dealing with that famous matter that aeroplane thing. You remember that they announced that it should be a committee of DGs, so he's one of those. That's why they're not acting.
The SAAP. Let's call it another name, the SAAP.
Yeah, the aeroplane. So he's in that, he's in the country, and he's just dealing with that at the moment until they finish it. Okay. And then the CFO, as I said, when I found Mr. Sokela here, and he then has left. It's not a promotion, it's a transfer to defend. So that's what happened, and I think the Minister of Defense, I think being Minister of Correctional Services, recruited him. Yeah. So that's what has happened, and then with the J.D. Schreiner, DDG, has moved with her just in promotion to be DG of Economic Development. And the post has been advertised now, and we'll be happy when the people inside apply, and before it closes on the 15th, I think it closes thereabouts. So I think we'll adjust that. But I take a point about in many other centers, we shouldn't be having acting, because what authority does this person have? It's got authority in the first month, second month, sixth month. But on the ninth month, you're still acting. You start not having the authority or commanding the respect that you should have. So I'm with you on that point, and I'm sure we can work together to identify some of those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to ask a question. I'm going to make a remark. And as I was listening to your presentation, it was outstanding, and I'm glad I'm not at your job, what you must do, and good luck with it. I visited Bransley and Drakensberg the other day, and I was really impressed with the neatness and everything over there. And but I'm worried about it's not to punish these people. To me, it's to rehabilitate them and to do something about that. And I like to ask you that. But I know one or other way, you'll have to find a way to increase your rehabilitation. And how do you measure your success? Isn't the only thing that you can measure it with is with rehabilitation, the success figure in rehabilitation. And we are not going to win the fight against crime if we don't start at the point and turn it around. And that's all I like to mention. Thank you.
Hello, Matilda.
No, thank you, Chair. Even if it's not today, but I think it will be important that, as I indicated earlier, that when this fourth parliament started, you only had acting people in the department. And I thought the minister would also take us into confidence in as far as the different regions and areas are concerned, you know. Because when we looked at the entire picture previously, it wasn't the head office only. It was a number of specific areas, and we're not sure as to what has happened. I mean, we are told the vacant posts have been advertised, people have been recruited, this is what is happening. At the end of the day, it's new entrants at the lowest level. That's what we find, and the reason why at some point people do not have the authority to take positions precisely because of being feeling stars, because they don't know what the next move is.
Honorable Bloom.
Can I add to that?
Today
the minister must tell us in all the nine provinces what is the situation in the provinces. Thanks.
Honorable Zamande.
Chair, the first, also to welcome the presentation. I think the department on its part has given us quite interesting information, Chair, in terms of their strat plans and the annual performance plans. I think for the 4 years that they've been making the presentations, they are better organized. Well, I think one must underscore that this time around, it's not just your narratives, without any pointers in terms of where we're going. I think as I've observed and listened, I think it's quite a significant improvement in as far as that is concerned. Chair, the issue of the VOD, what kind of format do they take? Because I see the targets, if I heard properly, they talk 8, 2 per quarter, something like that. And now in relation to the release and people who successfully get their paroles, does it cover that area of people who are released on paroles and that kind of thing? I think if they could shed light in as far as that, because I see the targets are, to me, are not equating to the other part of perhaps people that might be released and all of that. And they also talked on the issues of IT and ICT in particular, and their role in the JCPX cluster, Chair. Now, I can't remember whether it was Justice Chair that did the presentation around this activity of the appearances and bail, the video. I obviously with no benefit of having been reading on the visuals, they might have I would like to hear something around progress and their role in this, I suppose, videos to manage, you know, escapes as well, in terms of you don't have to take people for bail just for months and all that. Now, the other one, Chair, that one would like to ask about, and I'm not following what slide, what page, what column, the issue of when we visit correctional centers, and also one must welcome the ministerial task team, I think, and hopefully it's going to start dealing with these issues that have been outstanding, that have been reported to the parliamentary committees. You know, the issue of the shift, you know, other people coming in at 6 or so, and others leaving at 8, and others to remember the case of, that makes... Yes. Their shift system. So, if we could hear, what are the, what, in terms of the ATP, how is there any work that is going to that will be taking place in trying to deal with this issue of the shift, because it does cause a lot of problems in terms of those other people. Raising their concerns, if you remember the meeting we had with the WADA there, they indeed raised this matter quite seriously with us. the other matter, Chair, was the issue. All right, I'll come back. Thank you.
Hello, Matilda. No, thank you, Chair. Seeing that we are asking questions, maybe let us proceed. The issue around audio visuals, we know that there were 21 deployed. And 11 are operational. We're not sure what is happening. That is one specific area. The second area, at some point we were told that because the people that are supplying food in correctional services, that particular area was outsourced and that was on I'm not sure, on a contractual basis or a monthly basis, whatever. And so some years ago, you know, we were told that, and at that point, we were told that they were trying to bring back that particular service back into correctional services. I'm not sure where that area is, because I'm raising this precisely because of the point that has been raised around agriculture. See? Where the department, and that is around agriculture, also around
the shortage of staff, where you could not complete, you could not in all centers make sure that in terms of nutritional services, you deal with that specific area precisely because of shortage of staff. Where are you? What is happening? What is the situation? That's one specific area. Precisely because the department indicated in the presentation that you are trying to save costs. Now, I know outsourcing is a very expensive situation. It's a very expensive situation. And we're aware at some point that the issue of shifts affected, you know, was brought in to make sure that you save particular costs where people have to wait around overtime in particular, you know, those specific areas. But there was an area also around traveling that lower staff have to sleep over to be compensated for, well, whilst senior management will travel in and out of a specific area and be paid out. And that's an area that has been raised by members of Cultural Services with us. We were not sure you can clarify us on that specific matter, because that is an area that we get from members who are complaining to us that this is the situation. They're now reducing, while increasing, senior management is increasing their own packages in as far as that specific area is concerned, in terms of those benefits that are there. You see. The area around, I know that equipment for TB screening, and one was, you know, was given to Baltimore Prison. I'm not sure what is happening. One of us, what happened to the rest? Because that was then given to the department through the deputy minister, the deputy president of the country. We're not sure what is happening there, you know. And maybe if we can be clarified, you see. What I also wanted to indicate is I want to agree with Member Nzimande that in actual fact this time the department is better organized than at some point, you know, we only had actors here. We had to send them back so that they come with a person that can account, because there was no accounting officer who can account to this particular committee because of those specific problems that were there. And they were here, Minister, with all the provinces, but all of them were just actors. You see? Yeah. But briefly, maybe I'll stop there. I'll come back later. Chair.
Honorable Member. Yes.
Got it. Close, Madira. No, Madira must close. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Chair, one thing that has been repeatedly being planned in the APP has been this electronic something. Electronic monitor. It's been there, and I don't know, it's something they need to buy, something that they develop as software. It's never been implemented. That's why. It's always been promised. We are in the process. The other point, Chair, that I really want to be given some information on, Chair, is the issue the department has budgeted to defend 80% of litigation.
perhaps we need to break down what kind of, what, because you see the concern might be that you want to defend what some, what kind of cases they would share with us, what kind of litigation they are anticipating that they would have to really defend the 80% for this APP. Now the third one, sir, there was also a figure on the on some posts, I think 2,000 something was mentioned. What kind of posts are those? Because then there is also an issue about the issue of your what the acting CFO called scarce skills. Now, Chair, all other departments had, and I think we've asked this some time ago as well, what is the human resource development strategy? What is the performance there? Because we hear, we are talking to the other department, the sister department with health, or with health professionals or that and that. But what is the contribution? What is this department, if it concerned, in this area? What is it contributing? Because you can't be waiting for others to develop and hope that you get something from them. You negotiate, as they say. That's all what they are talking to. That's all what was mentioned, that I had mentioned, Chair, that they're only talking about all other departments. We all know social development contributed even with Azaris, I don't know this department, health, they've been striking deals, agreements and partnering with other people. The other issue I hate that the JCPS cluster, Chair. But other than that, are there any other stakeholders that they work with? For instance, the issue of the NGOs, civil society organizations, are they working? Do they bring any value, or they don't see any value in other stakeholders in general? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it's enough for a bite. So let's take this bite. Just to start with the structure. Firstly, Honorable Bloom, when we look at the structure of correctional services, the National Commissioner had a span of control that was too huge and therefore not manageable. You had all Deputy Director Generals, the Head Office, reporting to the National Commissioner, plus Regional Commissioners reporting to the National Commissioner. So when we looked at the efficiency of the department, we found that that could be one of the blockages in terms of service delivery and the efficiency of the organization. So we looked at the top echelon of the structure, and hence the post of a Chief Operating Officer was introduced in the department to be able to reduce some of the operational matters that an accounting officer is dealing with. And therefore, in the current structure, the regional commissioners are reporting to the COO. Therefore, that is the element of the organization that deals with operations and really things, certain things that you don't want to reduce an accounting officer to. That has reduced the self-control of the accounting officer. The second thing is that we were so fortunate that we managed to fill that structure up to 100% until this year, when Defence employed our CFO and the Economic Development Department took Ms. Rana to be the DG. Otherwise, that structure was full until this year. Now, in terms of regional commissioners, all regional commissioners have been appointed. There is no acting regional commissioner. In a case where somebody is acting, it's either somebody is on leave or out on official capacity. All the six regional commissioners have been appointed. And in all our regions,
deputy regional commissioners have been appointed. There's only one region where we don't have a deputy regional commissioner, and that is KwaZulu-Natal. In terms of area commissioners, we've got 52 management areas. Out of the 52 management areas, only 6 are vacant. So I think we can say with confidence that in terms of management, we have been able to ensure that we appoint people, and it's not people that are acting, that are making decisions. And even the ones that are vacant, it's because somebody is promoted. The Eastern Cape, for example, the current Deputy Regional Commissioner of the Eastern Cape was Area Commissioner Amathole, and therefore Amathole is vacant because she got promoted. So there are those instances where internally people get promoted. It's not only looking outside and bringing people from outside. When we look broader in terms of our senior management service and how it is structured. So I can say with confidence, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members, that in the area of management, in terms of government, we really tried to deal with the issue of aging. And maybe that is what is bringing, not maybe, it is what is bringing stability within the organization, because now people are occupying positions and taking responsibility. In terms of the issue of the VOD, and you'll pardon me if I'm not following the correct order, but I will try to cover the issues that are raised, and colleagues will also assist. In terms of the VOD that was raised, the 8 events that are in the plan, as the presenter was saying, those are ministerial events, if I may term it that way. Already in the country, we had about 85 sessions of VOD, which means that it's happening in centers, but we don't want to drag minister to every little center in Wabuma and say there's a VOD, there's a VOD in Abingdon, there's a VOD wherever. But as officials and managers, it's our responsibility to ensure that this thing is cascaded down. Within the short space of time that minister launched the VOD program, we already had 85. And I can assure you it's more than 85, because this is the latest figure that I had, and sessions are continuing to happen. The ministerial task team is looking at all issues that are affecting staff, and that way making the relationship between correctional services and labor sour. And amongst those issues, the issue of the shift system is there. So this joint task team, which is comprised of labor, both CRU and TSA, which are our recognized unions within correctional services, and management, 4 members each, are the ones that are looking at coming up with some solutions to these challenges that are facing us, including the shift system, including issues of OSD, including arguments of whether we owe people overtime or not. All those things that are creating tension between management and staff are dealt with in that task team. That task team is expected to report back to the minister in June. And therefore, I believe that after that, the minister can make that information available in terms of the progress that has been made by trying to stabilize and normalize DCS as a workplace. Honorable members, our traveling policy, there is no travel policy for senior members and travel policy for junior members. There is one DCS travel policy. I know that previously people were driving from Eastern Cape to Pretoria when there's a meeting. But when we said and we looked at this, we said people shall travel using the most cost-effective measure. If it's expensive, it's expensive to drive from Eastern Cape to Pretoria, because this person, even if they were attending a 4-hour meeting, they spend 12 hours on the road, they sleep over, they attend a 4-hour meeting. We've got all sorts of airlines now in the country, and people are allowed to use a flight in and out of Pretoria because that is the most economic one, and it's the most efficient one for the department, because for that matter, don't lose this person for 3 days. You lose the person for the few hours that they are attending. So
I didn't be sure that the officials were complaining what were they referring to, because we've got a policy, and that policy is applicable to everyone, from national commissioner to the lowest ranking official. Because when you go out, you are not going out on personal business, you are going there on official business. If there are specific cases where managers are taking advantage of people, we want to know about it so that we can follow up. But as a department, we've got one policy and it's applicable to all of us. In terms of the TB equipment, let me dispose of that one also quickly. The TB equipment that was donated by the Deputy President through the Department of Health, they allocated one machine per region. So each region receives one machine. But in our discussion with them, we also discussed the sizes of our regions and the magnitude of the problem that we are sitting with and so on. And the Department of Health was more than willing to say to us they will increase those machines. But the current situation is that they've allocated one machine per region. The issue of the audiovisual which was raised, I'm assuming that we're talking about the system that we use to also postpone cases and so on. Currently, we've deployed 47 audiovisuals. It's even increased from that number the honorable member was mentioning. And out of the 47, 26 are operational. And this year we are going to add 8 more. Now, the challenge that we are experiencing, reason for these things being non-operational, is the reasons that are experienced by ESCOM, the reasons that are experienced by Telkom, the issue of theft cabling. You know, yesterday somebody was proudly saying on national television, I'm going to steal electricity. And I said, where are we going to as a country if somebody can appear on national television and say, I'm going to steal electricity? Now, people are stealing cabling, and in some cases, the magistrates are not utilizing these things, and in some cases, we've got damages to the network cables. So there are various reasons why these things are not operational. But we are trying our best to make sure that they are fully operational. But as we know, with issues of cabling, you sort it out today, you come back the next day, it could be stolen. So those are the challenges that we are also grappling with as an institution. In terms of the HR strategy, I would request an opportunity, honorable members, when we are given an opportunity to present our HR strategy. So that we can present all the elements. We do offer bursaries as the Department of Correctional Services. But the current government policy says if you were offered a bursary by government, you must come back to serve government. So you can get a bursary from social development and serve DCS is allowed within the country. We are working with the Department of Social Development currently, trying to absorb their bursary holders because they've got in excess, they've produced excess social workers than what they need. So we are trying to work with other government departments to say, much as we also have our own bursary holders, can also assist us with your own bursary holders. But I'm saying the issues of our broader HR strategies can be unpacked in more detail. Should we be given an opportunity to do that? Yes, we work with quite a number of non-governmental organizations in rendering services, in rendering rehabilitation programs. There was an issue of how then we measure our success of rehabilitation. It's a very difficult one. But for me, as an individual, I want to say I've succeeded when we release that offender and that offender earns a living. That offender does not come back to our institution. Now, we've got non-governmental organizations like one, for example, that offers a life after they still call it prison, life after. I'll call it incarceration because I don't want to call it prison. They give starter kits to our parolees, the people that we release. Car wash machines, sewing machines, you name them. They give the starter kits and they say, you go and start your own thing so that you can earn a living. And we see positive results from such initiatives. But again, it's pockets of initiatives that are here and there. Our main challenge is that we rehabilitate an offender, we train them, they come out, they are a professional. They want to work for government. They get a Z83. The Z83 says, do you have a criminal offense? Yes or no. The person honestly ticks a yes, and then type of criminal offense, and that's the end of it. That person doesn't get appointed by government. And it's an issue that the government of South Africa needs to look into. To say that if we are saying the public sector must absorb and employ ex-offenders, why can't government lead by example? And also, in relevant fields, not just because they've offended and they are ex-offenders, those who have changed their life and they've acquired the skills and I'm a qualified teacher, why can't I teach? And that's the challenge that we are sitting with in the country. So yes, we see the fruits of rehabilitation here and there, but we also see people that are coming back, and when we interview them, the main reason is that I don't get a job, I'm frustrated, there's nothing else that I can do. I'm not sure whether Minister have left some of the things, I don't know.
On the issue of electronic monitoring, it's quite a very important innovation, which should enable us really to reduce quite significantly the overcrowding. We know that in many instances, well, first of all, our numbers are around 105,000 sentenced inmates. Then you've got another 40,000 are waiting time. That's what pushes us to 140, 150. We're always there. And if you didn't have these 40,000 that are waiting, we'll actually be not be overcrowded because our capacity is around 120,000 thereabout. So if you didn't have this flood of awaiting trials that are going to be coming in as we speak, 3 o'clock they'll be coming in. Some of them are going to come in awaiting trial and you go and see the next year, they're still sitting there awaiting trial. You go and see the 5 years after, they're still sitting there awaiting trial. There are some that have been sitting there for 7 years awaiting trial. It's actually an injustice in terms of what we stand for in terms of our constitution. In terms of our own constitution, justice must be done and must be done expeditiously. You can't have a situation where a person is like the previous banning order or detention without trial. So it just goes on because why should somebody be waiting for that long? And why do you arrest and then investigate? You investigate, then arrest, not the other way around. It does create quite a problem. In any case, at the JCPS structure cluster, we are discussing that with the relevant department, police and justice, because we stand, we are opening ourselves to be sued and that sort of thing, like we were sued by this gentleman of TDU. Lee Dudley Lee, I mean, he sued us successfully for an argument that he conducted TV in our facilities, and we won first round by saying he came with it, but on appeal we lost it, and it was a very not a strong case as we were standing. So that we need to reduce that, because generally democratic countries, certainly in Africa and everywhere else, are reducing the number of people who are inside. That's why
my Nigerian counterpart was so shocked when I was saying, oh, so many people are inside, and there was a ratio of 150, 160. They've got about 40,000 themselves with almost 200 million people. If you look at the list, just Google that and just see the list in Africa and the world. We're number one in Africa, we're number nine in the world. And it's not a correct thing. We are not looking for work in terms of having more people incarcerated. The more people corrected, the better. So the electronic monitoring is going, hopefully, together with the SHS, is going to assist us, because we are able to identify a person within a meter or something like that, wherever they are. And therefore, there is no, the main reason for keeping people inside is that they are going to abscond. You're not going to find them anywhere. Whether they are in an informal settlement or wherever they are, they will be found. So it will reduce the reason for keeping people inside this electronic monitoring. And they were rolling out 500 this year, and the next year I think it's 1,000, 2,000, and then it goes like that. So I'm sure now we should be starting to make a difference. Then the other issue of what would success be like, COO has touched on it. Success really for us would be a person coming in, being truly rehabilitated, going through the process. The first process is admitting to the VAPS that indeed it consists not in regret, which is I had a puncture and therefore the police caught me. You're regretting that fact that the car disappointed you, not that you did something wrong. It must be a remorse that I'm actually sorry that I did something like this, and actually have a situation where you want a reconciliation with the victim. It's a human being that you wrong. You wronged. You broke into somebody's house, messed up, you took the TV out of the way. That even though you knew you can't use it much, you just messed it. And did just a lot of, cruelty, just something that's just destructive, even if it was not going to gain you anything. You come to realize that this is wrong, and I admit so. And therefore, you want first that admission, and our social workers, our religious people and psychologists deal with you to say, are you truly sorry that you did this thing? Then when you are properly prepared, then you go to the victim. We don't take you to the victim, and then you go to the victim and say, oh, you can't do that, talk nonsense, I'm coming here and saying so, and you still call me a thief. And then a person must truly have gone through the psychological thing to understand that he wronged somebody, and he's not entitled to forgiveness. If forgiveness comes, it's upon us. But you wrong somebody, you must go and say, I'm sorry for everything. And it is actually happening, and it's actually quite a touching experience. It's a TRC at a personal level. TRC was national. This victim offender dialogue is personal, because national oppression, apartheid was national, but crime is personal. Crime is about you, it's not about an issue. They are robbing you, they are robbing your house, your car. And therefore, you must find some closer of sorts which, yes, this person actually is sorry, and so forth. So this victim-offender dialogue, therefore, assists in that process, and it's working quite well. And when people are not ready, we don't take them there, because they'll just make the matter worse if a person comes and wrongs you, and this talks cheeky and insulting and so forth. Then you don't have to go there, you just go do a sentence anyway. So that's what it is. And then in terms of the rehabilitation mandates that we have in terms of the Act, we say in the first instance, improve yourself. If you did not know how to read, write, and count, surely you can't state
being a state expense at something like 7,000, 8,000 rands a year, when a school child, we spend for a school child 9,000 rands a year, we spend for an inmate 7,000, 8,000 rands a month. It's a very distorted type of spending. Now, we can't spend so much, and this person can't even count, can't read, can't write. What skill, what is he going to do? The only thing that he knows is how to step somebody with an okapi or shoot. And therefore, must learn something. You are here for 5 years. Let that be. And if a person was at UCT for 5 years, they would have gone very far. And you are here, then. The basic reading and writing, then at ABET, up to 5, and then you go on from there, and so forth. So I think it's happened. When we institute this reading for redemption, it's part of the normal parole, but it's now added. It's not a new type of remission, but somebody reads, you read a book a month, and you summarize what that book is about. It really seems you are becoming a serious human being. Then it works towards our own parole. In the case of Brazil, it takes, if you're reading 12 books, it takes 48 days per year for your remission. We're able to work that in terms of our own legislation here, so that the person improves, actually becomes better than the people they left outside because they read and write and so forth. So that's our target as part of practical showing that this person is better. Could not read, write, could not use a computer, now they can. Did not have grade 5, now they have. They did not have grade 12, now they have. And they move on like that and so forth. That will increase our skills pool in the country as a whole. I think that's what it is. Then the last issue, this awaiting trial, I think it's something that DCS Portfolio Committee and police should perhaps say we should be able to meet together and say how do we deal with this matter of awaiting trial, because somewhere I think we are breaking the law. Certainly the spirit of our constitution by keeping people this long. Sometimes most of the people, almost 40-50% of them, are kept because the police station says 500 rands paid. And the person doesn't have 40 rands. Therefore we pay 8,000 rands to keep the person who could not pay 500 rands. It's a distorted thing. The person is given pay, but can't afford it. And therefore is kept inside. And it kept inside at a much higher cost. And it's something that we need to work out properly so that we should make, particularly if you take the granting of bail and the electronic monitoring. Therefore, you eliminate for the police. The police have been looking for this person for 2 years. They are not going to let go very easily and start looking for another 3 years for the same person. But if there's electronic monitoring, then that is limited because you can only find him. And therefore, there's no reason to keep that person inside. So it's part of the thing that perhaps become some innovation that we see. But the final one the CEO touched on, the task team of DCS, POPCO, and the PSE. It was an excellent meeting that we had. Very representative. And they've been waiting on it. According to myself, I asked that that report be given in March. They then approached us to say, can we extend it to June? That's why I was totally surprised about this court action by the few that broke away. I think it's really a political thing, because we are waiting for the report in June next month, which would then say, this is what we are proposing about overtime, about what OSD, and so forth and so forth. Let's hear that. So there is a very open channel to deal with those matters, and there can't be a situation where someone goes to court before even the report is considered, is presented and considered, and then you see if you are not satisfied. The professionals that we have for in the department, the social workers, field posts are 474, vacant posts 121. Psychologists and vocational counselors, fields are 57 and vacant are 18. So it's those, and then of course full-time doctors and so forth. So we are struggling for those scarce skills. I don't know where I would introduce this. Perhaps we would have to discuss first with my colleague, Ms. Amsualeti. In Brazil, both Brazil and Cuba, uses inmates. Here is an inmate who is 10 years. You take 3 years, 4 years to train as a professional nurse. 4 years. Here is someone who is doing 15 years. He's working in the hospital section of the center. That person has got trained properly. The patient is a patient, whether the patient is an open hammer or is an inmate. The GP will be the same, the dialysis will be the same, and so forth. So it gets trained properly. And in Cuba and Brazil, those people get trained by professionals in the same way that they would train at a nursing college. And actually qualify as professional nurses. Here, someone is only working here for 15 years in this hospital, and so forth. And the train, and therefore you can entrust them. With us, there was always the problem. I remember when we were on Rhode Island, there was Dr. Brassett. But at that time, it was him who refused to work in the hospital. He was an inmate. But it was him who refused. It was not the other way around. I don't know under myself what is the situation, whether it's us who are refusing an inmate to be trained properly, and as long as you know that you don't go to get angry one day and cut off another inmate, and therefore you've got a matter in your hands. But it's an issue that we need to look at, because if they can do all these farms, huge farms, they're built. A lot of correction centers are built by inmates. They qualify the building engineers and so forth. They build. Why wouldn't they do this? They cook. They do all those other things. Why can't they do this? It's something that we need to explore. Thanks.
Thank you. So some of them, we don't even have to train them. They were respect qualified. But we can't use them when they're inside. We tried the teachers, and when the Department of Education registered our schools, we were told that we can't use offenders as teachers, although they are qualified. So one of those things that in our country we have to look at some of these policies, obviously with the necessary caution, Honorable Minister, because even if the nurse is not an offender, when offenders go there, there's security. So even when there is an offender, there will still be that caution that is being exercised. So it's some of the things that we need to look into. There's an issue that I did not answer, the one of nutrition and the outsourcing thereof. We outsourced 8 management areas in correctional services in terms of catering. And the choice was choosing the biggest, the most problematic, where we had challenges and so on. That is why you'd get your Portsmouth, your St. Albert, your Durban Westville, your Pretoria, your Johannesburg being part of those. Yes, at some point we looked at the possibility of insourcing, and we had huge challenges from infrastructure to human resource capacity, and so on. And therefore, as a department, we decided, given the current challenges that we are having, including the shift system and all the other challenges that we are facing, let's do a feasibility study and see what is feasible for the Department of Correctional Services. From me, as
an individual. When I look at correctional services and I think about it and its mandate, food is the last thing I think of. It's not the core mandate of correctional services. Now, do we outsource, do we insource? We then decided to commission a feasibility study that is looking at all these things, because when we say it's expensive, we don't know whether factually it is indeed expensive. When we say this is cheap, we don't know whether factually this is cheap. That is why that feasibility study was commissioned. And it's underway. We are yet to get the results. In the meantime, we advertised the 8 management areas that were being outsourced. So the advert has gone out, the bids have closed, qualities have worked. It is now at a stage where it must appear before the National Bid Adjudication Committee so that a contract can be awarded to whoever who has won that contract. That is where we are in terms of catering. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Grumman, I think will be the last one.
No, Chair. I will never agree with the outsourcing of nutrition. I will never. You see what the minister has said now on inmates sitting there qualified, a doctor and what? That thing has raised it many years to say there's a doctor. This doctor is qualified. There's a teacher. This teacher is qualified. I have raised this thing. Now if we outsource teachers, and I know what Busaka is doing there, this outsourcing, it is the same very same inmate that is cooking, that is doing what, and everything. I know that thing. I oppose that thing, and I will oppose it. Because in that thing is corruption, nothing else. And I have said it many a times. Minister, you see, this overcrowding, Mzimel, the late Mzimel, spoke about this, the first minister in the Democrat. He spoke about this thing of overcrowding. You know, minister, what is the answer? It's politicalism. It's political will to tackle this thing head on. Even if people are getting angry and whatever and what. There are people sitting there and, you know, the chairperson has said, I'm a bull. I'm a poor in this thing. I know. You know, there are people sitting and the policy of correctional service is saying half your sentence, isn't it? Half. Now, you are sentencing this person to 2 years in prison. You can't rehabilitate that person for 1 year. You can't do it. That person will spend a year there in prison. If the president is giving this remission and what, less than that. Now, you are wasting taxpayers' money to keep that person. Sentence that prison and that person, but give him correctional supervision, and not keep this 105,000 people in there. Minister, I am saying political will to do that. The other one is the criminal record. You see, Minister Balfour have tried that thing. We were fighting all the time, but on this one I will tell you that Minister Balfour took 1 year in Cosmo prison to go and work in his office. It's a criminal record. But he has said, I want to be an example to the other people and my other colleagues, the ministers and whatever, to say that this person is a human being. She has made a mistake, but let us try her. And she was very good. She was working there in his office all the time, up until the parole had lapsed. And even after the parole, when Minister Balfour was redeployed, she was there, still there in that office. Now, I'm saying all these things, Minister, is political will. Let us take it and say, no, this is not right. We are going in this direction. And I'm telling you, you will have the support of this committee. And I'm very much sure of the portfolio committee that side. It will also give you that support. I think, there's a lot of
things, but I'm not going to ask these things. You see, my comrade, Matila, has asked the issue of farms. You see, I'm always driving, Chair, past Virginia Prison when I'm going to Bloemfontein. There's a big farm there. There's nothing going on there. Why are people sitting the whole day in prison, there in the cells, not working? People must work for their food. Why are we giving them food and they are not working? But, and I am telling inmates, prisoners, want to work, Minister. I'm telling you, they want to do work. Now they are sitting there and having wives and having cherries and hearts, all this dirty things.
How do you know?
I know. The Mugubus are building Mugubus inside the prison. I know all these things. I know that thing. And they can testify it's the truth. Now it's us who is doing those things. Let this person go out and work outside. And when he comes in, then this person will just wash, there's a bandit, the minister know what I'm talking about. from the quarry, straight into a shower, tired, go and sleep. Is it not good, minister? These people, I'm telling you, that's why they are doing, you see the holding, they are doing absolutely nothing. But yes, I think that we will continue and talk. Let me leave it there.
Thanks. Partly, Member Bloom has touched on this. I mean, you take Zanavater. There were a lot of fun around it. People within correctional services, you did not have to procure a lot of things because they were growing their own food. They were cooking their own food. You take one not far away from Sonavater, Babiansburg. Same thing has been happening. You know, when you go to Ekurhuleni, and people will say, hey, we don't want to go and grow Malambani in winter because they know they have to dig that out with their own hands. Mm. This government will not do that, you see. So that they have potato to eat and healthy food. Now, I'm not sure what went wrong, what was the problem. And we are continuing. I mean, you are talking about making sure that you buy implements, you buy these agricultural implements and whatever. For what? You see? If people don't grow their own. Because you see, if you sell them to these outsourcing companies, you sell them at a very cheap price, not at market price in most cases. You know? But when you buy them outside, they are too expensive. And that's where expensive comes in. The very same food becomes very expensive for those particular inmates there, you know. I mean, when we stayed, there was nothing that came from outside. It only came from inside, you know. And that is the situation. We're not sure why this unwillingness, because hence I said, Member Bloom has touched on the real issue. Almost all prisons had people had to cook inside, had their own farms, had everything else. It also used the problems within prison. So the infighting, the gangs that are there, produce those things. People were outside there doing work. When they come back, they are tired. You see? Now it increases a burden on people that are working within correctional services. And then at the end of the day, we call that abuse. Because these people, some of them are so strong that you have to be too physical to intervene, then something else comes up, you see, which then becomes a problem. Why can't we look at that particular situation and so that when you buy implements, you are able to know that you have actually reduced one specific burden of spending a lot of money in the market. Well, in fact, at the end of the day, companies that, for example, milk, you know, I know some of what is used to have a lot of cattle. You know, these dairy companies used to come and collect milk there and sell milk to communities outside there.
And that's what they used to do. I mean, so that you increase, you want to make sure that you reduce the burden on government. I'm just saying, this is the situation. This is what has been happening. We're not sure what has happened. The reality of the matter is, with all the problems that were told about this specific company, what's this, Busala? Because there are a lot of problems that were, when the previous minister was here, you know, she was tired of dealing with this particular Busasa. Just dealing with Busasa only. Now, why are we not moving away? I'm not saying it might be that because a lot of things that were done away with, they are no longer there. Why don't we plan in this, so that we plan to make sure that in the next 10 years we are back to the same situation, or in the next 5 years, so that at the end of the day, we are able to can save and make sure that we can send our kids to school for free, rather than spending a lot of money on inmates at school. Thank you, Chair.
You can respond. Honorable Gunde, you're not here most of the time. The question you want to raise, Honorable Dunne has already asked it. You can just talk to him.
Okay, that's not true. You can't
continue.
Okay. So I do have a question. I've got a comment.
You're about to close.
Yeah, I've got a comment. It was a good time for me to come in to listen to the minister, what the minister said.
Comment, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Susan, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My concern is not only the inmates. You must take the warders with training of our warders in this country. When we were in Germany, the things that we have seen, and I think this warders will be more responsible, accountable when the training that comes with it, the responsibility thereof, will make them aware of, listen, I've got a very important job. I'm not only here to lock up people and close people and open people. And this is my concern all along these years. I've got big friends, she knows them, within the correctional services. And I always complain, it's a good thing you want to look after the inmates, but what about the people who are supposed to work with them, who are supposed to assist them to get there where we want them to be? We need to assist even the warders, we need to train them. And even if it means they have to spend money to increase them, we need to do it. It's the only way how we will be able to rehabilitate our people. It's a mindset game. It's like HIV and AIDS. People with HIV and AIDS haven't got to kill. It's going to kill. Change your attitude, change your behavior, we can stop it. That's the problem. It's a mindset thing. It's not something that it's any and you can't do it. It's something that we can do. And minute I want to agree with you. I want to support you. The problem is that in the governmental, the different departments, like the Department of Education, the Department of Health, those people need to come on board and work with you. You must put the policy down and say, this is our vision. This is what we have. This is what we want to achieve. And then they must come and say, okay, let us buy into your plan. Because it will help government work millions of rands if you can. Well, teachers in prison, if you can help teaching, why not? And it will be much cheaper. And then the workers that are there can just get there. So this is my comment. I would like and believe that the department will use, I'm a person in belief. That's why I cite this operation clean audit. You want to have a clean audit, but the service delivery is even poorer. So it's not a good thing. You must have your worth for your money. The output must be there. That's what I want to say. Thank you, Shane.
Mm-hmm. You are responding the closing remarks, Minister.
I think in closing we should thank the officials. Their presentation was greatly splendid. Mm-hmm. You see, then I might come in small packages. really splendid. I think the comments have really assisted us, and I'm surprised there are so many bandits here. But thank you very much. I know we're going to take the points on board, and we're going to build on that and have further interactions the need arises. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me also take the opportunity to thank the minister and the team. The presentation was very good, and it has assisted us in the it will assist us in the coming budget debates. And we hope that your door will always be open. When we have further issues, we'll come in and raise them. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.